That's the one. What's the second one?
Good evening. I'd like to open the House Interim Committee on Business and Labor for this Thursday evening meeting, January 14th.
And I'm going to open this meeting of the Senate Workforce and General Government Committee, January 13th, 2016. Welcome, everyone. We're really pleased to have you all here on this very important issue.
So we do have some protocol to go through, but before we do that, we're just going to jump right in with a visit from the governor. And with that, Governor, welcome. I'm not sure about the protocol, the clapping in here, but
he hasn't read the rules yet. That was forbidden.
Mr. Co-Chairs, it felt really good, so thank you. Good evening, everyone. For the record, Kate Brown, serving as Oregon's governor. I appreciate the opportunity to spend a little time with you tonight, laying out a proposal that I have put on the table today to increase the minimum wage in a way that I think meets Oregon's needs. Last year, there were more than 94,000 single-parent households in Oregon headed by women with children under the age of 18. And the median family income for these families was just over $22,000 a year. That's a little over $1,800 a month. I think it's tough for a single person to live on that much, much less try raising a child as well. That perhaps explains why there were 20,000 children in Oregon homeless last year. It's difficult for our children to learn while living with constant uncertainty and chaos, without a warm, dry place to sleep, eat, or do their homework. 20,000 kids. And while raising the minimum wage alone will not fix the housing crisis, it's one important piece of the puzzle. This is the definition of working poor. Rent and the cost of essentials like food and childcare are rising so fast that wages are not keeping up. We have to tackle these issues now. This is the time to act. Raising the minimum wage will not be easy. Over the next couple of weeks, you'll hear various proposals for, against, and sideways. But it's imperative that we find a path forward together. I understand that raising the minimum wage will have an impact on our small businesses. We must weigh these impacts against the long-term societal costs of a generation raised in poverty. This would cost Oregon businesses and taxpayers far more. That's why I'm rolling out my proposal. It takes into account that our businesses need the time and certainty to prepare for a new minimum wage. It takes into account the economic reality of Oregon and many other states that some areas are growing faster than others. It takes into account the needs of the workforce to see hope on the horizon, an increase that helps them make ends meet, that helps their families and our communities thrive. The proposal calls for a two-tiered minimum wage that increases gradually over the next 6 years, starting in 2017. Throughout most of Oregon, the minimum wage will be raised to $10.25 in 2017 and gradually increase to $13.50 by 2022. After 2022, the minimum wage will return to the current rate of increase in conjunction with the Consumer Price Index. Within the Portland metro area's urban growth boundary, the wage will be set at 15% above the statewide minimum wage, increasing to $15.52 by 2022. My plan offers hardworking Oregonians the wage boost they need while respecting the economic differences we all see and feel across the entire state. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions. I have two of my fabulous policy advisors with me as well.
Thank you, Governor. I really appreciate you coming, and you know, I know this is new stuff, and I appreciate you coming laying this out for us. And we're going to entertain just a few questions to start with for the governor.
And let me just say, we have many, many people here, so let's try to keep the questions short.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor or staff, as whoever wants just to answer, thank you for coming in this evening. Now, you referenced, and I've heard talk about kind of the process. I've heard this bill referred to as a compromise. I gather there's kind of a work group that put this together. Can you tell us more about that process, who was involved, what kinds of things were considered, rejected, et cetera?
Sure.
Any more detail about that would be great.
Mr. Chairs, yes. About 5 weeks ago, we put together a group of four folks representing labor and four representing the business community. My goal was to reach a consensus around an increase in the minimum wage that would meet Oregon's small business needs around the state, as well as enable working families in facing a minimum wage to meet their rising costs of food, rent, housing, and child care. And so folks worked over the last few weeks. I'm happy to have both Alana and Vince speak to specifics. I think it's fair to say that there were roughly 8 to 10 different geographic variations considered in terms of the regional approach. I was very concerned about making sure that we did not increase the minimum wage too rapidly for our rural small businesses. And so that's one of the reasons we went to the two-tiered regional approach that we have in front of you. And in terms of consensus, I think it's fair to say everyone's a little grumpy with this particular proposal. I think what we tried to do with this proposal is reach middle ground and in a way that would meet Oregon's needs in a good way that will do it better than I think the ballot measure would.
Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your allowance of my joining your committee this evening. Governor, thank you so much for being here. And about 50 folks have driven from Ontario, Vail, and Nissa today, and your staff was kind enough to meet with them today. Well, while you're here, perhaps you could address the challenge we face, which, of course, is Idaho at $7.25. And we're already $2 higher. And if we raise it another dollar, then more businesses will flee into Idaho. And many of these folks here tonight will lose their jobs, actually, into a much lower wage environment. What can be done about the Malheur County, Baker County situation?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I appreciate those concerns. I think when we put this proposal forward, what we wanted to do was provide Oregon business with a planned and prepared way to meet the increase in terms of the minimum wage. As you probably are aware, there's a couple of initiatives, a $13.50 minimum wage that would be starting in 2015. And we felt like this proposal offers a better glide path than the number of initiatives that are out there right now.
Thank you.
Representative Doherty.
Yeah, thank you, Governor, for being here tonight. You were talking about a kind of, I'm going to, for use of a better term, a metro wage versus a state wage. And have you come up with what that would be? In other words, how would you define statewide, and how would you define others, and what parameters were being used?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doherty, the line that we drew, that we're using to draw between the metro area and the rest of the state, is the Portland metro area urban growth boundary. And I'm happy to have either Vince or Alana talk about the different geographic proposals that were on the table. We have to draw it. We felt like we needed to draw a line somewhere, and we felt that given the increased costs of housing and food and child care in the metropolitan area, along with the economic growth that we're seeing in the metropolitan area, that this made sense.
Thank you.
And Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Governor, for being here and expressing your concerns. I think we also have concerns in Eastern Oregon, just like Representative Bentz. And yesterday, during our business and labor committee meeting, The first question I asked to the first person that testified was if they had done a study and if they had the data that says if we raise minimum wage to this amount or to this amount, you know, what effect that would have on the economy. And I think as legislators, you know, we're charged with making good decisions based on good data. And I went through this last year, stayed till 3:30 last year, hearing a lot of emotional testimony, but really, we should be making these decisions based on a lot of good data and a lot of good studies, because if we make the wrong decision, it could be catastrophic for Oregon in unemployment and underemployment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, I totally and completely agree. That's why we structured this proposal in such a way that there's a glide path for Oregon businesses to plan and prepare for the increases. We felt like it was a better proposal than the initiatives that are out there. I know there are tons of studies in terms of the minimum wage and the impacts on the economy. I will tell you that my major concern is making sure that struggling families that are trying to survive on the minimum wage can't do so right now. The average cost of rent for an apartment in the state of Oregon, two-bedroom apartment, is $864. For a single parent earning minimum wage, they would have to work either 72 hours a week or be making $16.61 an hour. So I am also very concerned about the number of families struggling to make ends meet. We felt like this is a middle ground.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't see more questions for you at this time. Governor, thank you so much.
Thank you all very much. We appreciate your time, your energy, and I'm sure it'll be a very interesting hearing, and I know there are a number of folks coming from all around the state, and I appreciate them having the opportunity to have their voices be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to make a few comments before we get started with the public testimony. We anticipate ending this meeting. We were scheduled for 8:30. We're going to probably run till 9 o'clock. We're going to try to hear people that come from far away, that have traveled hundreds of miles, generally over 100 miles. We're going to try to make sure they get heard, and we'll endeavor to get everybody else heard after that. The state police are here to help us adhere to the fire marshal code, so please pay attention to them when they if they decide to talk to you. We have overflow rooms and rooms D and rooms E, and we will open additional hearing rooms if needed. Please be courteous. I know everybody is of those speaking. We ask that there be no clapping, heckling, or booing, and please maintain the decorum in the overflow rooms just the same, please, as they are an extension of this hearing room, and those people need to hear what we're saying as well, because many of the people that are going to testify are in those other rooms, and they need to get here so we can keep moving. Placards and signs are not allowed in the hearing rooms. They are considered a distraction, a disturbance. So refrain from bringing those in, please, or you'll probably be asked to take them back outside. They can block the view of those in the audience, it's obvious, and they're really distracting for us. We will call up panels of four, alternating panels for and against raising the minimum wage, and we will probably have some panels, a few panels that are neutral. We will name the panel on deck to allow you for time to get to the hearing room if you're in one of those overflow rooms. So pay attention when your name gets called, you know, start heading in. If we call you up on deck, please get on into this room so you're ready to go. Limit your comments to 2 minutes. In a few minutes, Jan will explain the little stoplight here. In order to hear from as many citizens as possible, we have asked that the committee members not ask questions. If we are running short of time, we will give priority to those who have traveled more than 100 miles. I know there's people here from Eastern Oregon that came on buses that are going to return, so I'm going to endeavor to try to get a lot of them up first or ahead of schedule so We still hope to be able to get through a lot of people. Elected officials will be given priority to speak first. That's usually our protocol, but we ask that they, too, stick to the two-minute limit. And we are keeping the record open until 5 p.m. Friday. And if you wish to submit written testimony, the email address for submitting written testimony is written at the top of the printed agenda. Which you can also find on our website for certain. So with that, anything to add, Senator Dimbro?
I just want to say just how much we appreciate you all taking the time to come here and speak your mind, and know that you're not just speaking for yourself. There are a lot of people out there. I'm sure wherever you are on this issue, there are many people who couldn't make it here today, and we appreciate your taking the time to do that. And as the House Chair mentioned, if you have written testimony that you'd like to submit, you can do that tomorrow, and it'll be part of the permanent public record of this. And we will be taking all of this testimony into careful consideration as we craft the final legislation that goes forward. So thank you again.
And Jan, you want to explain the stoplight for us real quick?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The timer will be set for 2 minutes, and you'll see a flashing yellow light when you have 30 seconds left. So we ask that you finish up in those 30 seconds.
Thank you. And with that, we have two esteemed elected officials up first. Representative Cliff Bentz, go ahead and start it.
Thank you, Chair Hovey, Chair Dimbro, and members of the committee. My name is Cliff Bentz. I represent District 60, which is Far Eastern Oregon. I have a number of constituents here who drove some 400 miles this day. They'll drive 400 miles back after this is over. And I'm very, very appreciative of their attendance. We have a situation in Oregon and across the nation that I think in many respects reflects an emptying out of the middle class, and our challenge is how in the world do we find jobs to fill that hole. Raising the minimum wage is one attempt and one partial fix, but in our part of the world it doesn't work. Here's why. The emptying out of the middle class has been caused by three reasons: globalization, mechanization, and computerization. And as these jobs have fled the country, we haven't fixed the problem. Raising the minimum wage does a little, certainly doesn't create brand new great jobs. Globalization means that jobs have left and gone to such places as China, where the work is done much less expensively. Ontario, Malheur, Ontario and Malheur County and Vail and Nissa, China is only 100 yards away. It's called Idaho. And so what's happening is when we raise the rates, they all flee jobs to China. And the people over there, I'm sorry, Idaho, and they get paid less money. So what we're sitting here today doing is saying, look, for God's sakes, if you're going to raise these wages, who are you going to hurt in my county? It's going to be the workers. We just attracted, after years of work, 350 jobs. David Fry Foods, put the plant up on the hill. A lot of you helped us get those jobs. You have a letter in your testimony today that says that if this happens, he won't be able to meet the standards that the new market tax credit and all the other things we put together impose upon him. So what will happen to those 350 people that escaped China, made it back into Oregon, I'm sorry, Idaho, made it back into Oregon, and are now making good wages? They'll get to go home to Idaho. I got to make this point. We are hurting the people that work in our county, not just little business, which, by the way, it will basically drive away. Now, I don't want to make a joke of it, as I probably have. This is hugely serious business. This is hugely damaging to my area of the state. For goodness sakes, carve Baker County and Malheur County out and let them meet this challenge presented by that particular state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative, and welcome, Commissioner Jules Bailey.
Thank you, Chairs Holvey and Dimbro, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of serving as Multnomah County Commissioner for District 1 for the west side parts of southeast Portland and a little bit of northeast. And it is an honor to be here today to talk to you a little bit about the challenges that people in Portland and Multnomah County are facing. The fact is, as many of you know, in the Portland region, we have one of the tightest rental markets in the nation. A new Brookings study recently reported that the Portland metro region is near or at the bottom of rising income inequality, one of the worst rising income inequality metro regions in the nation. Families are struggling. They're struggling with rents, with housing prices, with getting their kids into childcare, with putting food on the table. People need a way out. They need a way to be able to afford to take care of their families, and raising the wage makes that possible. I came down here today to tell you that we ought to raise the wage, but I'm extremely pleased to be following the governor and her leadership in proposing a way to do that. The Portland metro region faces challenges and costs that aren't always the same as the rest of the state, and we need a bold proposal to be able to raise the wage. We need to do it quickly, but we also need to make sure it gets done. And I am strongly supportive of the governor and her efforts. I would urge you all to be supportive as well, because we need to get this done for working families in Multnomah County and in the Portland region. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both very much.
It's a great way to lead into this.
Okay, so we're going to call up the first panel, which is self-declared in favor. And Andrea Peluso, Deb Field, Jason Nance, and Sue Watkins, please.
And on deck, we have Jennifer Ewer, Tom Branley, Kathleen Saldana, and Shay Myers.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Dembro, Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Peluso. I'm the Executive Director of Family Forward Oregon. Our mission is to create an Oregon where all women and families can be economically secure and have the support they need to both maintain a job and the time they need to meet their family caregiving responsibilities. Unfortunately, today, too many families are forced to sacrifice one for the other. That's why Family Forward supports policies like raising the minimum wage, something that advances the economic security of more women and their families, making it more likely that someone working full-time can raise a family with one single job, which has dramatic impacts on the time they have for family caregiving. We're also a member of the Raise the Wage Coalition, which is a group of labor, business, and community organizations that are committed to raising wages for workers in 2016. Before I go further, I want to acknowledge the governor's proposal. We've not yet endorsed this proposal. The long phase-in is longer than we feel workers should have to wait, and the proposal doesn't adequately address the preemption that is suppressing wages across the state. However, our coalition appreciates our governor's leadership and that of Senate President Peter Courtney and Speaker Tina Kotek. This is a profoundly important issue to working families and one that we sincerely hope will be resolved during this legislative session. Oregon families simply can't afford to wait any longer. Tonight, you're going to hear from low-wage workers from across the state who have a personal story to share, business owners who overwhelmingly support this economy-boosting policy, nonprofits who want their communities to thrive, faith leaders who believe in the plight of low-wage workers is an injustice to all, and many more. You'll also hear from opponents to this increase. While they, too, want what is best for the state, just as our coalition does, we have very real differences about how to get there. Contrary to what you will hear tonight, credible research does not suggest that increasing the minimum wage will lead to widespread inflation, price increases, or job loss. Conversely, a wide breadth of economic research on the topic suggests that raising the minimum wage will boost local economies by allowing workers to spend more money in local businesses while improving the quality of life for those 500,000 workers who will be impacted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Dembro and Holvey and committee members, I am Deb Field, and I am the owner of Paper Jam Press in Northeast Portland. I am a proud member of Main Street Alliance of Oregon. I and Main Street Alliance support increasing Oregon's minimum wage to $13.50 an hour or higher. I know you will hear from people who say that raising the minimum wage is bad for small business. But I want you to know from my own personal experience, it's not only the right thing to do, but it's been good for my business. I know that when my employees and my customers can't afford the basics like food, rent, and childcare, it hurts us all. Raising the minimum wage puts more money in the pockets of consumers, powering our local economy and driving business growth. After all, one business employee is another's customer. When my employees are paid well enough to afford necessities such as transportation, health, and housing, their attendance and performance at work improves. Increased productivity and reduced turnover can save business owners like me more money and can offset the costs associated with raising wages. I pay my employees a starting wage of $15 an hour. And I believe they are worth it, and I want to show them I understand their value and their contribution to my business. At the end of the day, raising the minimum wage in Oregon is the right thing to do for business and for our communities. It will ensure that everyone has the ability to thrive in the communities where they live and work. It will also level the playing field for businesses like mine that compete with large corporations. Let's keep Oregon doing the right thing and pass a minimum wage increase this session. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nance.
Thank you. Chairs Dimbrough, Holby, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. For the record, my name is Jason Nance. I live in Eugene. I've been working at the same fast food restaurant since 2009. When I first started working there about 6.5 years ago, I naturally thought it was going to be a temporary job until I found something better as I had just moved to Eugene. I'm still there today, and I'm still making less than $10 an hour. I have been, over the years, promoted up to entry-level manager, but at the while I got a raise that came with that, it was a 40-cent raise in November of 2014, and I have seen no raise since. I also saw the 30% cut in my hours to avoid any interactions with the Affordable Care Act. To do the job, I have to travel 4 miles each way on public transit as I don't have my own vehicle. The daily commute on a bus in Eugene over that distance takes 45 to 50 minutes each way to start a workday that officially starts at 10 a.m., when in reality it's much closer to 7:30. I do work an average of 28 hours a week. Any hours over that 1 week will be taken out of my hours the next week. Unfortunately, when I lose those hours the next week, I don't lose any of the responsibilities that go with them. To get by, I have cut everything I possibly could think of out of my budget. Eating out, going to movies, any kind of social interactions that cost money. I have not been able to buy a new clothes, wardrobes, see a dentist. We do have Trillium, but they do have quite the waiting list. I look forward to getting a new front tooth soon. I do, thankfully, live in an apartment that costs only $350 a month. That is far below the average rental cost in Oregon. Nobody else in Eugene, much less the rest of the state, is that lucky. If we were to raise the wages, I would be able to pay my own debts. I would be able to buy my own clothes. I would be able to buy a vehicle. I would be able to invest in my future to improve my own employability and contributions to society. Oregonians who put in an honest day's work should receive an honest day's pay instead of living on the edge. Thank you.
Thank you. If you could move the mic over for her just a little bit. Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself first, please.
Hi, my name is Sue Watkins. I'm a home care worker for a 92-year-old lady with dementia. The work I do is very important because it allows seniors and people with physical and mental challenges to live independently as possible and gives them a sense of worth. Throughout my life, I have made lower wages than most. This has made it very difficult for me to support my children when they were little. Oregon Health Plan was and still is the only thing that I can afford. They do not pay for my daughter's autoimmune disorder medication, nor do they pay for my son's physical challenge support or my daughter's braces. If I could make a higher wage, I could support my children more effectively and meet their needs. I want to help make it so no one has to go through what my family did, or at least make it easier for them. This is why I support the fight to raise minimum wage. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here tonight. Up now we have Jennifer Ewer, Tom Brawley, Kathy Saldana, and Shay Myers.
And on deck, as they're coming up, Lori Satinspiel, Jamie Partridge, Pete Hybertson, and Eric Gross.
My name is Jennifer Ewer, and I've come from Hood River to testify tonight because this issue poses such a serious threat to my orchard business. I am from not the Portland metro area, and I do appreciate the attempt to recognize that the rest of Oregon does not face the same situation that Portland does, and we have different challenges. The Oregon State Legislature can make producing fruit more expensive in relation to every single competitor I face on the globe. But as the previous testifier said, you can't do anything about prices. She said there's no evidence that this will change prices, and in fact, it will not change the price of pears. My product will cost more to produce, more than it costs to produce the same thing in Washington, more than it costs to produce the same thing in Argentina. But I will face the same price because it's a global price. And I'm not the only business that's in this situation. 250 acres of pears in Hood River produce the quantity of pears consumed in the state of Oregon. There are 14,000 acres of pears. That leaves 13,750 acres competing outside the state of Oregon. That's 98% of our production competing in national and international markets. The income generated by our industry in those markets is of great value to the state of Oregon, as you all know. Farmers' markets are a lovely thing. They do not make a meaningful dent in the sales of produce grown in Oregon. Unfortunately, you have the power to put me out of business. You don't have the power to affect the price I'm able to charge for my product, which is the only thing that would offset the disadvantage that you are imposing on my business. I am competing mostly with pears and other produce grown outside of Oregon. If you want your produce to come from outside the U.S., and especially outside Oregon, this is the quickest way to make that happen.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Brawley. I'm a family farmer from right here in Marion County. We started our farm operation about 40 years ago here in Oregon. We came from Washington. We have two operations. One of them is a row crop operation, which is smaller than our Christmas tree operation. At this point, my son carries the load on the Christmas trees, but I can represent that very well. First of all, I'd like to talk to you about minimum wage. I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, the state of Oregon is now somewhere in the top 10% of the wages paid minimum of all the states. And here we are considering more and more to be paid out by the businesses. This minimum wage doesn't affect just one person that we employ. It's compounded. We pay salaries from minimum on up to $25 an hour. Do you think that the person that's got a wage somewhere in the middle is going to want to, or let's take the $12 person or the $14 person. When we raise that minimum wage up to $14, how are they going to feel? They're going to want to raise. And so it's compounded. It isn't just one person. We calculate that at harvest time, well, normally we hire about 30 people in our Christmas tree operation for year round. At harvest time, we hire 300. We pay an annual salary to our employees of approximately $2.5 million. If this minimum wage is enacted, we calculate that we're going to have to pay another $1 million. We cannot demand a higher increase in the price of our trees.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. I appreciate being here tonight. I have to really try to keep this on schedule because we have a lot of people that want to voice their opinions. So try to wrap it up in 2 minutes. If you do,
I'm fine, sir. I think I've said enough.
Thank you. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Kathy Saldana from Bell, Oregon. I have the A Street Tavern. We live in a farm community of approximately 1,600 people. I employ between 2 to 3 people, and the farmers are what support me. They are talking about going automotive, and if they do, there will be loss of employees. Their loss is my loss. I wholeheartedly hope and I wholeheartedly pray that you will listen to us. We can't afford this. We can't even afford any kind of wage. We are struggling like no other. Since 2008, we have been trying to climb out of the hole, and we feel like we have no say-so. So I'm asking you, please, do not do this to us. I've been in business for over 25, or almost 25 years. I'm a single woman. I'm raising my granddaughter. I have sole custody of her. I'm struggling. I don't even make minimum wage, but I'm making it. And the employees that work for me are very faithful. I put this on my Facebook. Nobody wants this because they know what's going to happen and the catastrophic effect it will have on all of us. I'm emotional and I'm passionate, and I thank you for listening to me, but please, please don't do this to us. Cut us out of your life then. Let us just be the way we are. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Shay Myers. I am an operator of an onion packing facility located in Nissa, Oregon. And I, too, traveled, almost 800 miles by the time I get back today, close to 900. The reason I'm here today is because this is about jobs. This proposal is about creating and maintaining jobs in our state. And I need to explain something that's very important and that everyone, I hope that everyone can understand my perspective and the reality of what I'm going to say. Our packing facility is 300 yards from Idaho. 300 yards. And the minimum wage in Idaho is $7.25. Our workers that have been with us for 5, 10, 15 years, many of them making much more than minimum wage, in fact, most of them, will not have a job with any increase. Automation is already becoming cheaper and cheaper. Just like our solar and wind technology is becoming cheaper, so is automation. And automation for us in the sorting and onion sorting is an easy thing to step into. I don't want to eliminate jobs, but if we have a cost increase as significant as what we're speaking of, and any increase really in comparison to what I'm paying or would pay in Idaho, I really have two options. I can automate or I can relocate to Idaho. The ROI, the return on investment in moving to Idaho for a brand new facility with this increase is 2 years. 2 years. The ROI on the automation is 4 years. That's an easy decision to make. It's a difficult decision to make, but it's an easy one. We can maintain the jobs and keep our employees that have been with us for years, or we can send them on their way and replace them with robots. We can send them away on their way and replace them with robots, or we can go to another state where they're going to take a pay cut so we can stay in business. That's our options. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much, panel. Okay, call up Lori Satinspiel, please, Jamie Partridge, Pete Hybertson, and Eric Gross.
And on deck, I have Ronald Verini, Logan Hamilton, Janine Weeks, and Paul Skeen. You're in the other rooms. Can you make your way to the hearing room F? Thank you.
Lori, you want to start?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Chair Dembro, Chair Holby, Lori Satinspiel for the Oregon School Board Association. I've put on OLIS, Jan put on OLIS for me, impacts of minimum wage to school districts. LFO had asked us, what are the impacts at 1350? And we surveyed our districts to try to find out personnel program impacts, and that on OLIS calls that out. To highlight a couple, I think Mr. Brawley commented about compounding. We call it indexing because if someone gets a raise, that go up on the pay scale 2 steps, the person that's right there sitting above them is going to want a 2-step. So we have some collective bargaining concerns from districts that they've talked about. programs. One that we know will be impacted is the free and reduced lunch. Last session, the legislature picked up the tab on the reduced side, so those folks paying for lunch on a reduced rate would get it for free. With wage increases, those programs operate at a zero-sum game and sometimes already have to be subsidized. With an increase, those programs, the price will have to be moved on down to the student or cut workers. And I just wanted to highlight a few of those. I am in the building, and people can talk to me about that if they'd like, if they take a look at that. Hearing the governor's proposal, a little different snapshot of time now that we need to consider. And I just appreciate you guys taking a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Jamie.
Hi, I'm Jamie Partridge. I'm one of the chief petitioners on the ballot initiative to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour over 3 years. And I'm with Oregonians for 15. This is the basic message that we're bringing. We want the legislature to pass a $15 minimum wage, or we're going to the ballot. I won't go into why workers need a $15 minimum wage. I think a number of folks have already testified about the difficulties of living under $15 an hour across the state of Oregon. We're not in favor of the governor's proposal, which leaves out a whole sector of the workforce at $13.50, and the 6 year phase in is much too long. Plus, it doesn't lift the preemption, which is necessary for such places like Portland, which actually need to go above 15. So no worker deserves to live in poverty, not in Portland, not in Eugene, not in Medford, not in Coos Bay, not in Bend, not in LeGrand, not in Ontario. No worker. And we're not here to beg or negotiate. We're just here basically to tell the legislature, to tell the public, to tell our allies, to tell our opponents that they have there's two choices here, $15 or the ballot. We know what workers need to get out of poverty. We know it'll be good for the economy. We know it'll be good for business. We know it'll be good for the taxpayers. $1.7 billion saved in safety net costs if workers are brought off of those programs. That's taxpayer savings. And, of course, we know that the studies show that $15 is what workers need in the state. And it will be good if the legislature were with us, but it doesn't really matter because we have direct democracy in this state. We have the opportunity to go to the ballot. We have over 20,000 signatures. We'll have 40,000 by the time we get to the legislative session. We'll have 60,000 after
you.
The legislative session. We're on our way to 88,000
right.
signatures.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Pete?
Yes, my name is Pete Ivertson, and I'm also a part of Oregonians for 15. I work with homeless people at two different agencies in the city, and I make less than $15 an hour. Portland City Council has declared a housing state of emergency, and they were right to do that. I have seen firsthand how waves of predatory no-cause evictions and rent hikes are overwhelming social services' capacity to keep up. I have seen firsthand the traumatizing effects that this is having on our communities, and I myself experienced a no-cause eviction 1 year ago. Hundreds of thousands of working Oregonians make less than $15 per hour, and women and people of color are particularly likely to be in that group. As low-wage workers, many of us live one bad break away from displacement, homelessness, or both. And in this way, the fight for 15 is a very simple demand, but it has an impact that reaches well beyond the numbers that appear on our paychecks, and it carries a diversity of struggles with it in its heart. We literally cannot afford to wait until 2022, as Governor Brown just proposed. We literally cannot afford to settle for a smaller number, as is shown in multiple recent studies. And we are told that our immediate urgent needs have to be measured by the standards of the people who profit by paying us poverty wages. We have been accused of starting a civil war for organizing a ballot initiative, which is well within our rights to do, and the only reason we need to do this is due to an inadequate, an unsuccessful, and an obstructionist legislative process. There is a term for this. It is called victim blaming. Now, some of you have expressed support for raising the minimum wage, and we appreciate that, but actions speak louder than words. We have been quite clear that only a statewide $15 minimum wage phased in over no longer than 3 years and a repeal of the local preemption is enough to prevent us from moving to the ballot. If we do this, have this so-called civil war in November, it will be because your actions have fallen short of what is necessary.
Thank you. Pete, Eric?
Yes, thank you. My name is Eric Gross, and I'm with Oregonians for 15 as well. I am actually a four-year graduate with a degree in economics from the University of Oregon. And so you might be surprised to hear that I am a low-wage worker at a Kmart in the Dalles, based on the structure of our economy and what's happening in small towns. Despite working there for 4 or 5 years, I still make only 10 cents above the minimum wage. I've known people who have worked there for a year or more who have similar education to me. And fortunately, I happen to have subsidized housing because my mom used to be a low-wage worker as well. But my best friend, Jimmy, he's struggling to put food on the table, and he's in a housing crisis right now, even though he's a professional, lifelong cook with 20 years of experience because he's paid only $10 to $12 an hour. In my life, visiting my mom in the nursing home, and when I go shopping, I see the faces of these lowly paid workers. They're some of the hardest working individuals in our economy, and yet they're dependent on government assistance to make ends meet. It's time to stop calling them, thinking of them as undeserving or somehow that they deserve what they're getting. It's simply not the case. Now, we've raised the minimum wage before. At the federal level in 1949, we nearly doubled it. And we nearly raised it by 50% in Oregon in the 80s and again in the 1990s. It didn't have the kind of destructive job losses that the critics are saying now that it would. Most low-wage workers today are not teenagers. They're over the age of 21. They're raising families. They're skilled and talented. We need to reward a hard day's work honestly. And in this day and age, that means $15 an hour or the ballot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks all four of you.
Thank you. Up next, I have Ronald Barini, Logan Hamilton, Janine Weeks, and Paul Skeen.
And as they're coming up on deck, we have Onisha Cochran, Peter Emerson, Bob Hollander, and Tyler McGinnis, please. Please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ron Verini. I'm the mayor of Ontario. And we just traveled 7 hours to come here, 30 or 40 of us, in buses and caravans. Mayor County is unique within the state of Oregon. We do not have the pleasure of industry of any great volume. And we don't certainly have the demographics of Western Oregon. We sit on the border of a state that has a minimum wage of $7.25. We are poor, we are struggling, we have the highest unemployment rate of any of the communities next to us. The communication that I'm receiving in my office from businesses that are in town and in Malheur County are those that are attempting to attract, and what we are trying to keep, are coming to me with proposals of automation in the case of onions and of course potatoes, or move their operation 1 mile away to Idaho to counteract an increase in this minimum wage. I'm not asking you to not increase the minimum wage for communities that have the ability to absorb this. Eastern Oregon does not have that luxury, let alone the jobs. Please, carve us out of this proposal. We are a poor county competing in the world trying to attract jobs, and we are not going to be able to do that if you tie our hands and force us to accept a minimum wage that will devastate most in our area and help only a few. I beg you to develop a plan that gives each community the capability of controlling their own destiny
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Chairmen and committee members, thank you for listening to both sides. My name is Logan Hamilton. I own a business in Oregon. We have grocery stores that was founded by myself and my wife. We have two stores in Idaho. We have three stores in Oregon. We're in three different cities and two different counties. This is devastating for our business. We would have to close one of our Oregon stores. So it would be a sacrifice of 30 to 40 jobs. We would have to look to cut wages or cut help in the other two Oregon stores to survive. I sit with my employees. I understand the tough part of making a living a single mother. I was raised by a divorced parent, a single mother. My mom was on food stamps. I remember going to the school line and living on school lunches and getting subsidy. I started my minimum wage job, and I worked, and I put myself in position to own my own company. Three of my managers out of the five have started with our company at minimum wage job and worked themselves to be store managers and pulled themselves out of that. I sit down. We raised wages across the board last year with our Oregon stores, not just because of the minimum wage. We sit and raised with each employees and our managers. And I sit with our employees now and feel their pain and ask, how can we get better? I'm an independent grocer. I compete against the big box stores. I can't just raise my prices. But I don't want to have the conversation of having to close stores and go to Idaho, because that's where I have to survive my business. Thank you for your time. And I appreciate people's pain out there to live off of. This is a tough decision. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Janine Weeks. I'm superintendent of Nissa School District, the eastern border of which is the Snake River and Idaho. I'm here today to convey to you three ways in which an increase in the minimum wage could impact the Nissa community. First of all, in the school district itself, we experienced an increase of $480,000 in state school fund from last year to this. Just two of the necessities that needed to be covered by those funds are implementation of full-day kindergarten. That cost us $200,000 for two additional teachers. We also had an increase of 2% in salaries for all staff, including our hourly staff, of $212,000. So that took care of the majority of that increase in funding. Here are the projected costs of an increase in a minimum wage. Cost to increase only those staff currently below, let's say, $13.50, for example, is $122,000. That creates a problem because the individual whose salary was just raised to a new minimum is now making more than an individual who's been working in the district for 11 years. So if we change that and increase the lowest hourly rate to $13.50 and all other salaries proportionately, that cost is $484,000. If we raise the hourly rate to $15 for all salaries proportionately, that cost is $704,000. With that in mind, it seems like cutting jobs is a likely outcome. Approximately one quarter of NISA students are identified as migratory students, which means they move frequently as their parents look for work in agriculture. The impact of losing those students because of the changes that have been expressed by other members in the community would be catastrophic for our district. So while it's understandable that those individuals should have increases in wages, we ask you to consider the additional costs. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Dumbrow, and no, it's Senator Dumbrow, and I'm not good at this, and Representative Holvey, I've sent all of you information. My name is Paul Skeen. I farm in Nissa. I'm the president of the Malheur County Onion Growers Association. Malheur County is the number one growing onion county in the United States. We grow 11,000 acres, produces about $240 million in that little community.
And for your information, it serves, for everybody that's eating, about 37 million people eating onions. Of course, I've traveled here a long ways, too. I guess I want to speak from the heart with this. There's a line in between our valley. It's called the Snake River. 7 1/4 on one side, 9 1/4 on the other. Idaho, Eastern Oregon Onion Association, that sells, we're the largest onion growing area, when you take Idaho into it, in the United States. I have to compete against Idaho at 7 1/4. You raise it to 15, you're going to lower our housing, you're going to lower our land values, you're going to kill us over there. And the governor said, housing is expensive. I got a beautiful brick home on one of my farms, $850 a month, 4-bedroom, 3-bath house. This isn't Portland. This is out in the middle of nowhere. Sorry to say it, but I love it, and I've been there my whole life. I'm an Oregonian. Protect us. Do what State Representative Bence said. Carve us out and save our jobs. You're going to ruin us if you don't. Thank you.
Thank you very much, panel.
Okay, so next up we have Onisha Cochran, Peter Emerson, Bob Hollander, and Tyler McGinnis.
And on deck, I have Vicki Hines, Robert Brady, Melicio Lopez, and Andrew Hiddle.
Okay, Ms. Cochran, you want to start?
Thank you, Chairs Dembrough and Hovey and members of the committee. My name is Onisha Cochran, and I'm here tonight to testify in support of raising the minimum wage in Oregon. I'm a student and part-time student worker at Portland Community College. I am paid $9.75 an hour. My partner works full-time as a community health worker, making slightly more than minimum wage. She has limited health insurance through her employer and often foregoes proper medical attention because she can't afford the copay. Our son, Michael, is in college, and his tuition is paid for by grants. All our extra resources go to support him at school. Our money doesn't stretch enough to eat as healthy as we would like. As a result of living off of cheaper food filled with additives, my partner has been diagnosed as pre-diabetic. We are renting my sister's home for $7.50 a month in inner northeast Portland. We are incredibly blessed to have a home. Unfortunately, we do not have enough money to pay for repairs on our house. The heater broke 2 years ago, and we couldn't afford to fix it. So we started using our stove to heat our home, and the heated bar in the bottom of the oven snapped in half, and now we can't even bake our food. We're currently using portable heaters, which not only increase our light bill, but are dangerous to use long term. Our son is in college. Like I said, he gets financial aid. He goes into school in Weed, California. Oftentimes, we have to do a GoFundMe campaign to raise money to send him stuff that he needs. We have no savings. We have relied on utility assistance programs in the past, and we depend on the kindness of others to make ends meet. An increase in the minimum wage will help lift our family out of poverty. We need the Oregon legislature to raise the wage this session. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Thank you very much for coming. I love your T-shirt.
Thank you.
Hello, Chairs Dembrough and Holvey and committee members. My name is Peter Emerson, and I'm the owner of the Bipartisan Cafe in Portland and a proud member of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. I and the Main Street Alliance of Oregon support increasing Oregon's minimum wage to $13.50 or higher. 10 years ago, I opened the Bipartisan Cafe with a mission of creating a neighborhood coffee shop where community members can congregate and share ideas. We believe very strongly in the residents and customers, the small businesses and schools, the events and associations that all conspire to build a community out of this neighborhood. Right now, we employ 25 people. Our starting wage is minimum wage, which increases shortly after a brief period. We serve coffee, sandwiches, soup, homemade baked goods, and really good homemade pie. There are hundreds of minimum wage workers who live within walking distance of my cafe. if they can't afford to come into my cafe and buy a slice of pie and a cup of coffee, those are hundreds of customers that I just don't have. I know that when my employees and my customers can't afford the basics like food, rent, and childcare, it hurts us all. If my employees' life is so stressful, it shows in their work. If they have to have a second job, then I have less flexibility in covering sick days. The service industry has one of the highest turnover rates of any industry, which is very costly. When my employees are paid well enough to afford necessities such as transportation, health, and housing, their attendance and performance at work improves. Increased productivity and reduced turnover can save business owners like me money and more than offset costs associated with raising wages. When I hear other business owners talking about how raising minimum wage will hurt their businesses, I ask them, who are your customers? In my community, it's not CEOs of big companies. It's people who live and work in my neighborhood who will directly benefit if they have more money to spend. At the end of the day, raising the minimum wage in Oregon is the right thing to do for businesses and for our communities.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob Hollander. And before I get started, I just wanted to say I really, really appreciate all of you helping make our democracy work. So good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I come from Pleasant Hill, Oregon, just south of Eugene, and I'm here to support the minimum wage, raising it, that is. Professionally, I've been a retirement planner and investment advisor for the past 22 years, having my own business, and I just retired last year. Most of my 350 clients were blue-collar workers. They worked hard, but it was hard to save. Let me tell you about one of my clients. I'll call her Sophie. She was an office clerk who worked at a local sawmill and had no retirement plan, even though she was 50 years old when I started to work with her. She was not covered by a union. The mill had no retirement plan because the mill was too small. Sophie's wages were minimum because she had worked at other mills that had closed and was therefore bounced from minimum wage job to minimum wage job. She naturally was barely able to save any money and put anything into her IRA. But she did so because she was a hard worker and frugal and was able to save $2,000 a year. But as you can imagine, when it was time to retire, it was not enough. Prior to being an investment advisor, I taught school, high school and middle school for 13 years. And there were students I had whose families struggled with jobs that did not pay a decent wage. I had a student whose name was Jake. I made home visits to his home and found that it was in total disarray, and I won't even describe it. You can just imagine. When the parents weren't at work and at their minimum wage jobs, the family stressors were all consuming. Mom and Dad did not have time or the means to engage and guide their high-need students.
Thank you.
Jake and students like him ultimately got lost and in trouble with school and the law, and they cost our state money.
Thank you.
So I urge you
Thank
to
you.
Just two
Thank
more
you.
Sentences.
We have a lot of people. If everybody did that, we wouldn't get through this. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for making your point.
Thank you.
It's in the written testimony I've submitted.
Thank you.
No, you can stay there.
Good evening, Chair Dembro, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tyler McInnes, and I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're here tonight to discuss facts, and throughout the course of the evening, you may hear a number of claims, but I urge you to stick to the facts. The facts show that Oregon's low-wage workers need a raise and that you can give them one. Between 2007 and 2014, the share of Oregon families with children living in poverty, despite having at least one family working at least part-time, grew by nearly 28%. And since the end of the Great Recession, Oregon has seen the second highest spike in food insecurity in the nation, trailing only Louisiana. These are sobering and unacceptable facts. But there are also facts about the minimum wage that I urge you to consider tonight. For one, we know that significantly increasing the minimum wage would positively benefit hundreds of thousands of low-wage workers here in Oregon. And we know there's precedent for significantly increasing the wage here. In 1989, the legislature increased the minimum wage 42% over 2 years. Raising the minimum wage to $13.50 over 2 years would increase the state's wage floor by 46%. We know that Oregon's small businesses and small business jobs have grown statewide following past minimum wage increases.
And the research tells us that minimum wage increases do not have a discernible impact on job growth. And in the record, you should see a study I submitted was released recently from Cornell University's School of Hospitality that shows that increases in the minimum wage have not negatively affected job growth in the restaurant industry. And finally, we know that raising the minimum wage is a net positive for the majority of workers affected. Where there are problems in certain public benefits programs, the legislature ought to correct those. Those are problem areas for workers today who are offered more hours or better pay at their job, regardless of what action you take on minimum wage. And so in conclusion, the facts show that Oregon's low-wage workers need a raise, and you can give them one. I urge the Legislative Assembly in the upcoming session to give Oregon workers the raise they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay.
Up next, Vicki Hines, Robert Brady, Melicio Lopez, and Andrew Hiddle.
And on deck, we'll have Martha Rodriguez, Laura Rondo, Joy A. Willman, and Tim Cowan. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair Dumbro, and Chair Colby, and representatives. This is new for us. My name is Vicki Hines. I am from Ontario, Oregon. My husband and I own a business called Jolts and Juice, a coffee company that we started back in 2001, just before 9/11 happened. First, I want to say that the way we look at this issue, we've been told that it really doesn't matter pretty much what we think because there are enough votes to go ahead and pass this minimum wage. What I will tell you is this will be devastating to our community. Our business, other people's businesses. We made a commitment when we started our business to take care of our employees, and that meant do whatever we needed to do. If that meant that we got by with a very minimum amount to pay our employees, especially when 2008 happened, that's exactly what we did. We've been very fortunate and been able to grow our business. We now have in Ontario 22 employees. That doesn't include our brewer and our baker, which we are also able to expand into. But I will tell you, there is no new business that has come into Ontario to bring the kind of income that we need to be able to sustain any kind of increase the way that you're being talked about. All of you received from us an email, and on there's a link. That goes too fast. We actually contacted our accountant so that you guys all could take a look at the real figures. Bottom line, after 3 years of the minimum wage increase, our payroll will increase 62%. Payroll should be under 30% of your gross, 62%. That would cause our company to have a loss if it were our – it's not our company that I'm using. But it would cause our company to have a loss of $198,000. That's six people.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks for coming.
My name is Robert Brady. I'm better known as Burger Bob. I believe I'm the sole representative from Baker County. My wife and I own – the last independent drive-in restaurant in the county. I've been involved with it since inception in 1960. At that time, a hamburger cost 19 cents. Today, the very same hamburger, same size, is $2.39. We've had over 975 employees. Some of those are dentists, lawyers, circuit court judges, and otherwise. In 1996, we voted in a price increase by changing the minimum wage from $4.75 to $6.50 an hour. I immediately raised prices, took 30 hours away from my employees, and went on the floor. I've been there ever since. People complain about working 4 or 5 years at minimum wage. I've been doing it for 20 years, 40 years actually. Minimum wage, even though I'm the business owner and have a college degree and otherwise. 46% was mentioned as an increase. Our economy doesn't even increase at 46%. I took the numbers given us for $13.50 an hour. $4.25 for a week is $603 a week increase for me, $30,000 a year. If that's going to be a proper percentage of my gross sales, I have to increase my sales in 1 year by $152,000 in Baker County. I want you to tell me how I'm going to do that. 16,000 in entire county, not 100,000, not a million. I have about 8,000 customer potential base to work with, and they have to come back again and again and again. One last thing. This is a very socialistic approach to trading, giving money from one and taking, giving it to another. It doesn't want to work. The leader of my church said we were supposed to re-enthrone the work as a governing worth ethic in our lives. That was in 1927. Thank you.
Sir. Good evening. My name is Amelisio Lopez. I was born and raised in Mexico, as you can notice. I came to this country when I was 14 years old, looking for a better life. Luckily, I found one, and that was a minimum wage. And I did something with my life, all on minimum wage. Now, luckily, the coin have two faces. I'm working in the other face. I'm against this race for reasons. I employ 60 people right now. I get 60 employees, and I like to keep them. I got employees there with me for the last 25 years. I believe, this is my belief, if this race come up to us, they're going to destroy a way of life. I need to start looking for, not only me, a lot of us, shortcuts, maybe even laid off some of our old people that we have for the last 25 years, because we cannot afford it. Times right now, at this point, are real tough in our part of the state, and hopefully we'll get better, but right now, we just cannot afford it. Thank you for your time, and hopefully something can be done. Thank you.
Chair Zumbro, Chair Holby. For the record, my name is Andrew Hiddle. Thank you for having me this evening. I, too, came from NHTSA today. I'm born and raised in NHTSA. I work in Ontario, excuse me. I'm currently an employee at a small privately owned retailer in Ontario. If the proposed minimum wage hike were to take effect, my employer and several other employers in my county will have no choice but to let us go. And there's no ultimatum that anybody can give that's going to change that for my county. I'm a wounded veteran. I physically cannot do too much anymore. I wear that as a badge of honor. I'm happy that I've served, and I'd do it again if I could. But I physically am not able to go work construction or go work out in the fields. I need to stay in a retail environment. I can't do that if the minimum wage is increased. I'm getting by fine right now. Malheur County is different than every other place in the state. Please don't forget that Oregon continues east of the Cascades, but please remember that we are different than everybody else. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your service. Okay, so next up we have Martha Rodriguez, Laura Rondo, Joye Willman. Sorry. And Tim Cowan, if you would all come up.
And on deck, Logan Skeen, Jacob May, Larry Robb, and John Brindenbach.
Should be another one, but why don't you go ahead?
Chairs Dembro and Holby, and members of the committee. My name is Laura Rondeau, and I am here tonight to testify in support of raising the minimum wage in Oregon. I am one of the thousands of low-wage workers in Oregon that desperately need an increase in the minimum wage to survive. I am 26 years old, who can't afford to go back to college, and I'm struggling to get by working 40 hours a week at two different part-time jobs that pay just $9.25 an hour, Oregon's minimum wage. During the week, I work at Cafe Yum near Portland State University, and on the weekends, I work at Fire on the Mountain. Combined, I bring home about $1,200 a month, and that money does not last. My rent is $575 a month. I rent a room in a house with four other people. I can't afford a car, so I use public transit, which accounts for $100 a month. And apparently, I make too much to qualify for the Oregon Health Plan, so I currently have no health insurance. And I'm about four quarters away from completing my bachelor's degree at PSU. Unfortunately, I have racked up too much debt to go back to school. My hope was to work for a while and save up money to reduce the amount of money I need to borrow. However, I have not been able to get a job paying a living wage, so I am stuck. One day, I hope to finish my undergraduate degree and complete master's and doctorate degrees and become a clinical psychologist. However, the deck is stacked against me and others of my generation. We can't make enough money to save for college, and we can't afford to go to college without some sort of savings. The legislature can take an important step this session and give thousands of Oregonians a chance. Raise the minimum wage in Oregon to a living wage. Give me an opportunity to save money and go back to college. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Thank you.
Chairs, committee members, my name is Tim Cowan. Wow, how do you follow this? I don't know. Here's what I'm going to take a look at or talk about. You have my written testimony. I think there's a difference between minimum wage for workers and survival of those on fixed income. I'm concerned with people on fixed income. If raising the minimum wage increases the cost of living, that's going to impact those on fixed income. Those on fixed income struggle with survival. It's a relationship between as you get older and the salary goes down and your ability to invest slows down, stops, and where it meets. We live now about 20 years after retirement. I cannot go back into the environment, work environment, and make enough money to take care of what medical expenses and stuff are. I feel so much compassion for the people that have testified, but I also take a look at the people who are older, they're retired, they can't get work, they get ill, they're in an environment where they can't get any better, and I don't see a lot of difference. So I would just like you to think about or include survival for those on fixed income.
Thank you, Mr. Cowan, very much. Okay, so how do you pronounce your name?
Joy.
Joy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
To the chairs and the committee, thank you for having me tonight. And Tim spoke very eloquently, and it feeds right into what I have to say pretty much, because I'm a home care worker and I take care of seniors and people with disabilities. I have two different clients. One is with the state through a brokerage, and the other is a private client. And everybody knows him, and you know I'm going to say his name because he wants me to. But regardless, I've worked for Laddie for 22 years, and I followed him through the state services, the brokerage services, and now into a private agency. I had to take a pay cut when I joined the private agency to keep him, but like I said, I've had him 22 years. I'm not going to leave him in the lurch. Regardless, my reason that I'm here tonight, Oregon Cares has asked me to come and speak to the disparity between my two jobs. I get a reasonable salary with the state brokerage, and our basic wage for starting is just turned $14 an hour this month. At the private agency, when I spoke to you in April, I got $9.90 a month. Now they've given me a raise. I get $10.50. It still isn't enough. And I would like to see the disparity stop. I do the same job for both clients. And in Laddie's case, for those who know him, he's in an electric wheelchair, and it's a lot more difficult than it is for the one that I get paid higher to take care of. I would just like to see the disparity stop, and I would like to at least have a fair wage across the board for home care workers, so that no matter whether you work in an agency or you work for the state brokerages or the state system, that you'll get paid an equal wage. So the private agency care workers have joined together with the Oregon Cares Coalition, and we're asking for a $15 minimum wage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joy. Thank you, all three of you.
Up now, I have Logan Skeen, Jacob May, Larry Robb, and John Breidenbach. Something close.
And on deck, Ramon Ramirez, Bertha Del Toro, Jemani Crockett.
I think the state list is translated.
And we have a translator.
Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. Chair Hovey and Chair Dembrow and the rest of the committee. My name is Logan Skeen. I'm from Nyssa, Oregon, like many of these others that have traveled this far today. I'm 26 years old, and I'm a small business owner. Upon graduating from college, I came back to a small town because that's where I grew up and that's what I love. And I farm alongside with my dad, as well as I have a small farm of my own. The reason I came back to a small town is because I like the small town values. But right now, our small town is struggling. It's on the decline. And if this minimum wage is to pass, that's going to continue. I want my kids to be able to go to good schools that have the technology necessary for them to be well-educated. But as it stands, our schools are already struggling. We're struggling to get by. If this minimum wage is increased, businesses are going to leave and they're going to move across to Idaho, as we have heard. That's going to cause a discrepancy in the tax income to be able to pay for these new schools and the supplies that are needed. As far as for myself in agriculture, our area is now entering the fourth and in some areas the fifth year of a drought. Much of the ground in our area has been had to be left unfarmed. This has been a big detriment to many of the farmers. They've either had to grow a crop that doesn't require as much water or leave the ground unfarmed. This is a loss of income. We've also now faced the sick paid leave and now an increase in minimum wage. On the other side, commodities are decreasing. There's no increase in prices for commodities, so our costs are going up. On a personal level, 20% of our production comes from sweet corn seed. Over a two-week period, we will pay out over $150,000 for what is called detasseling. We're the only grower in the state of Oregon for this company. The rest are all in Idaho. We are their largest grower. If this increases, we will no longer be profitable. We will either be forced to automate and not do as good of a job, lower our yields, or that production will even go to the state of Idaho, and we will be left without 20% of our income. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Holvey and Chair Dimbro, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Jake May. I'm from Nissa, Oregon. I'm 27 years old. I have a wife, two children, and we're currently working our way through the ranks of life. Just a little under 10 years ago, I started at minimum wage. And today, I sit in a very unique opportunity where I work with some of our lowest employees, and I work with our owners of the company. And I guess I'm what you would call a boots-on-the-ground guy. I can see the bottom, and I can see the top, and I interact with both. And I heard a comment that stuck in my mind tonight was plan to prepare was what we were given as a business. The plan that I will present to the owners of our business in the upcoming years, if this wage increase happens, is we'll do one of two things. Probably the first one, we'll mechanize. Mechanization is not the problem. It's the loss of jobs is the problem. Those are real people in our community. My kids play with their kids. I see them at church. I see them at the grocery store. They're lives that are directly intertwined with mine. That's something that I don't want to have to face, but it's something that I will take back and we will face and we will address that problem. But it's not the solution for Oregon, I don't believe. In my opinion, there's nothing good that will come to Malheur County from this wage increase. I don't know the other side of the state, but I do know our side of the state. I've lived there my entire life, and it is not the right thing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Chair Holvey, Chair Dunbro. My name is Larry Robb. I own the Red Apple Grocery Store in Ontario. I've owned that for about 13 years. We've been in this business. I've been in the business for 50 years, and we enjoy some of Oregon's great laws, such as the sales tax benefits for our sales, because it helps us against the Idaho constituency. But we struggle greatly with, like, bottle and can redemption, which costs us $150,000 a year to maintain, and our freight costs, because we're out in the middle of nowhere, costs us another $300,000 annually. Our minimum wage, of course, is $2 higher than it is for our bordering state, which is China, 1.4 miles east of our location. And those three things combined cost me an annual fee of about $500,000 and compared to what my competitors are a little over a mile away. In the grocery industry, grocery retail across the nation, our net profit is approximately 1.3%. I can tell you in 14, I didn't make 1.3%, and last year was just a little bit over 1. As an independent owner, even if we made $12 million a year in sales, these are very catastrophic figures for us to try to deal with. A wage increase of which is already $72,000 more than I would be paying in Idaho. $10.50 it would be $123,000 more. And at $10.75 I'm at break even with my net profit. It would be catastrophic for us. At $15 an hour, it's three times my annual income. So those are real figures because I'm in competition. And when our farmers leave, I lose business. I would probably lose 25 employees. We've already cut back 37 employees in the last 4 years, part of that due to the rates in wages. Our average hourly pay is 40% higher than it was 4 years ago. And that's because I move my people up when I think they deserve it. We work with them hard. When there's a catastrophic event in the family, I take care of them.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming all the way and giving us your testimony. Go ahead.
Senator Demereau, Representative Hawley, chairs. My name is John Breidenbach, and I have the pleasure of running the Ontario Area Chamber of Commerce. We have 358 members currently in that chamber from both sides of the river, Idaho and Oregon. And when this first broke a while back, well, last session, about minimum wage going up, I had businesses starting to call and ask questions about what they should do, and we said wait and see. Well, so the part I want to talk about tonight, you've already heard my businesses say they're leaving. I've already had one store close, but is the economic development side. I actually had a call from a gentleman in Utah Christmas week who was wanting to come to town and purchase one of our, I believe it was either a hotel or a restaurant. It's a hospitality business. I could figure that much out. You know, economic development, they don't want to tell you what it is. And I know of one that's retiring, so I'm putting two and two together. Well, he called. I told him all about how wonderful Ontario was. Our challenges are good, the bad. And he said thank you, and I was pretty sure that he was going to call our economic development team then right after that. Well, he calls back the next day, and he says to me, John, what is this about Oregon and a $15 minimum wage? I said, you know, I just heard that there's something else on the table besides a $15 minimum wage. Perhaps they're going to separate it by divisions of the state. Portland may have one, Bend may have another, and they may leave us alone or give us a minimal increase. And he said to me, all right, well, when they figure that out at your capital, I will call you back. So I'm asking you here tonight to figure it out at our capital. Do what you have to do. Keep it off the ballot. Do whatever you have to do, but carve out Malheur County, Baker County, and let us get on with our little bit of what we have of economic development. And that, a big part of that, is just business retention. If we start losing businesses in Malheur County just across the river, we're dead. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again for traveling all this way.
Okay, Ramon Ramirez, Bertha Del Toro, and I think we have a translator for her. And Jemani Crockett, please.
And on deck, Robert Holmes, Ron Bickmore, John Kirby, and Catherine Collins.
Chair Denbrough and Chair Hovey and members of the committee, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farmworker Union. And I have my testimony prepared, we're hearing strong support of increasing the minimum wage to either $13.50 or $15 an hour. But I'm feeling compelled to address some of the issues that the people in opposition, especially from Eastern Oregon, have testified today. The fact of the matter is that in Idaho, and I'm only talking about farm labor, okay, so I'm not talking about retail, I'm not talking about manufacturing, but just farm labor. The minimum wage for farm workers, the majority of farm workers in Idaho, is not $7.25 an hour. Idaho is the largest user of guest workers in the United States at this point, next to North Carolina and Washington State. They employ about 10 to 15,000 farm workers. The minimum wage for farm workers is in that area is $11.75 an hour. If you factor in the cost of housing and transportation, it's about 15 or 16 hours. We're not in competition with Idaho. It's the other way around. So minimum wage in Idaho for agriculture workers is a lot higher. So it's a total misrepresentation of fact to come into this building and say that we're in competition with China, I mean Idaho, because it's not true. The same thing accounts for Washington State. Washington State is now becoming a state where they're using a lot of guest workers. And the minimum wage for a guest worker in Washington is $12.69. So I wanted to clear that up. And I'm willing to submit testimony and records from the Department of Labor to back up my statement today that, you know, that the minimum wage for workers in Idaho is a lot more higher. And I think we need to clear that up. Thank you very much. And the other thing in closing is that California is considering a 15-hour raise and Washington a 1350. Thank you.
Thanks. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, would you please assure us that we'll get copies of this if it's sent in? I'd like to see it.
Sure.
These are records provided by the Department of Labor.
Yeah. We'll make those available.
Yes. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Presidente de Dembro y Olvi de los comités. Mi nombre es Berta del Toro. Vivo en Portland, Oregon. Trabajo en un vivero sembrando y cortando plantas y gano $10.75 la hora. Soy madre soltera y sola tengo que mantener a mi hija de 14 años.
Presidents Dembro and Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Berta del Toro and I live in Portland. I work in a nursery, planting and pruning plants. I earn $10.75 an hour. I am a single mom and I alone have to support my daughter. She's 14 years old.
Ganar tampoco ha afectado profundamente a mi familia. Mi trabajo es por estaciones y no gano lo suficiente para ahorrar para los meses que no tengo trabajo. Con lo que gano apenas alcanzo para cubrir la renta de mi vivienda y lo comparto con otra familia y los gastos básicos mensuales.
Earning so little is deeply affecting my family. My work is seasonal, and I do not make enough money to save for the times or the months where I don't have any work. What I make is barely enough to cover the rent, which I share with other families, and whatever basic costs I have to pay during the month.
Lo más que me preocupa es que en unos años, cuando mi hija termine el colegio, no tendré suficiente dinero ahorrado para ayudarla con los costos de su educación y temo que ella tenga que experiencia educativa, tiene que trabajar para ayudar con los gastos de la casa.
What worries me most is that in a few years, when my daughter finishes high school, I will not have enough money saved to help her with her education. I am really afraid that she is not going to be able to go through that educational experience because she's going to have to work instead to help with the family expenses.
Por esta razón les pido el aumento del salario mínimo en el 2016. Gracias.
These are the reasons why I ask that you support the minimum wage raise in 2016. Thank you.
Jemani, welcome.
Good evening, legislators. My name is Jemani LaShawn. My pronouns are she, her, hers. They, them, theirs are my name. And I'm here from Southern Oregon, down in Ashland. I want to thank you all so much for allowing me to speak to you today on behalf of low-income Oregonians who bear the burden of current minimum wages. Just before me, we heard the concerns of a mother who's concerned about the future of her child once she tries to pursue higher education. So today I want to share with you all my perspective as a second-year college student who is paying for my own education and trying to survive on my own, making $9.25 an hour, with only the capacity to work 10 hours a week. After graduation, my first order of business is to find a job so that I can start paying off my $23,000 of student debt, a number that is sure to double, if not triple, by the time I finish my next 2 years of education with the accruing interest that's put on top of that. With the increased cost of living, people, your Oregonians, are having to work several jobs in order to support their families. Younger folks like myself are granted funding in order to be able to afford these degrees that society is declaring that we need in order to succeed. However, we're not being provided with the tools that we need after graduation to survive, succeed, and pay off our debt. And these tools do include a higher minimum wage, especially for women of color like myself, who are most likely to have to work these lower income jobs. As Oregonians who look to you for justice and representation, I ask you to support me, my community, a majority of communities that are in support of this higher minimum wage. Thank you all.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you. Up next, we have Robert Holmes, Ron Bickmore, John Kirby, and Catherine Collins.
And on deck, Robin Morris Collins, Ty Romano, Sophia Stanford, and Bruce Humphreys.
Welcome. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Go ahead. I'm Robert Holmes. I'm from Nis, Oregon. I have a sit-down restaurant and lounge that I built in 2007 from scratch. We hire 22 employees. They range in age from 18 to 68. Any increase in the minimum wage will drastically affect my business. We live on the border of Idaho, as you've heard several times. The restaurant industry is a little bit different in Idaho than the $7.25. Restaurant workers in Idaho get paid $3.25 because they get to count their tips towards a minimum wage requirement. So we are already at a $6 disadvantage in Malheur County when we can go, as you've heard many times, a mile across the border and do that. So an increase of $13 to $13.50 will increase my labor cost to 46% of my annual sales. That doesn't work. And with the new sick leave policy that we have for employers, you know, it's just another hit that we're taking, that it's increasing our costs. The minimum wage increase will cost jobs. My employees do not want it. I've had 60% of my employees for six or more years. They have good jobs. I've talked to every one of them. They do not want this minimum wage. Carve us out. Save our jobs. Save my business.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairperson, I'm Ron Bickmore. I'm from Ontario. You might can tell I'm a senior citizen. I live on a fixed wage, fixed income. All the people I know that are senior citizens are living on fixed incomes. I interviewed about 100 last week and part of this week, senior citizens all from Ontario and neighboring cities. Out of 100, only two people wanted this minimum wage affected. They don't want it. They all know that what the minimum wage is going to cause an increase in cost of living, which means a decrease in their purchase ability. Don't do it. Do not do it. Now, I would just one comment about some of the things I've heard. I didn't realize that Portland had such an influence on their business owners that they couldn't pay them more than the minimum wage. They don't have to wait for this to pass. If they want to pay their employees more, let them go ahead and pay more. Thank you.
Senator Drembo, Representative Holy, my name is John Kirby. I own a hardware store in Ontario, Oregon, in Malheur County. I employ about 17 people. I've been in the business 51 years, and I'm now passing this business on to my children. One thing that's different for me is I've tried to be progressive, I guess, in a conservative county. So I've had sick pay for years, and I pay 100% of my employees' health insurance. However, with a minimum wage increase, the health insurance goes out the window. So they're going to be buying health insurance with after-tax dollars. And so they're going to get a loss. My economic base comes from onion sheds, Murakami produce, DeBryan produce, Snake River produce, Fromm's. You know, and if they move or mechanize, that's going to affect me directly. And it will affect our community. Some people say, buck up and pay more. 60% of my customers come from Idaho. They're not going to realize that increase in wage that everybody is talking about. And I guess what I'm asking you is not to paint with a wide brush. You know, we're different from the Willamette Valley. Those of us in Eastern Oregon are there because we love where we live. We cannot survive with the proposed increases. Thank you for your time.
I forgot my glasses. Chair Holvey, Chair Dembro, and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I did bring a visual aid. I don't know if you can see it from there, but it just gives you an idea of how far Miller County is, and particularly Ontario. A lot of times when you say you're from Eastern Oregon, they say, oh, Bend? No, it bends here. A lot further east, so if I may. My name is Catherine Collins, for the record. I do live in Ontario, Oregon. I've lived there for some time. I'm the executive director of the Treasure Valley Children's Relief Nursery. Are you all familiar with relief nurseries? I'm sure you are. Our mission, like the other relief nurseries in Oregon, is to prevent child abuse and neglect by strengthening struggling families. In Malheur County, I have no shortage of struggling families. We are the highest poverty county in Oregon. We have a constant waiting list of about 20 to 30 toddlers and young children. Mm-hmm. What I do have is a great shortage of financial resources. There are no private foundations in Malheur County, unlike many of the other counties in Oregon enjoy. And we have little opportunity for corporate support. I don't have an Intel or a Nike up the road. Our largest employer is our state's largest prison, who can't make donations. For the past 5 years, I have worked hard to pay my employees more than minimum wage. My highest paid home visitor is making just $12.80 an hour, and she has a 4-year degree. My employees are skilled, educated, and some of the most kind and compassionate people you would ever hope to meet, and they must be because they work with some of the most traumatized, fragile children in our community. I have worked hard to raise enough money after 2 years to be able to give my 9 staff a $200 monthly health insurance stipend, but with any increase in mandatory minimum wage, I would be forced to take that from my staff to use it to make up that difference. An increase beyond that would mean we close our doors, and that would be a shame because in September we will have brand new doors. Mm-hmm. I have worked hard to raise over $1 million in grants from private foundations outside Ontario, obviously, in the Northwest. But how could I continue to operate when my donors, these good people here, small business owners, when they're all closed or struggling to make their own payroll or have moved across the border? Finally, as you might guess, the loss of jobs will increase the propensity for child abuse in my community. Job loss is one of those factors that increases the risk. So I implore the legislature and governor, please don't turn your back on the hardworking citizens, struggling children, and families of Malheur County. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Robin Morris Collins, Ty Romano, Sophia Stanford, and Bruce Humphreys, please.
And on deck, Nancy Hadle, Craig Frohr, and Sharla Richards. And Doug Rogers.
Chairs Dembro, Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robin Morris Collin. I am a law professor, and I'm honored to be here today in my role as commissioner serving on the Oregon Commission for Black Affairs. Our commission has done some research and found that a large proportion of Oregonians working for minimum wage are women, heads of household, and many of them are African American women. It's an honor to be here to be able to address your discussion of raising the minimum wage, and I am here to support the raise in the minimum wage. Women of color are important shareholders in the discussion, and thank you for holding an evening session and allowing us to participate. Our commissions profoundly believe in the American credo, that if you work hard enough in America, you can succeed. We share the belief in this land of opportunity, and yet when people are working two and three jobs, up to 80 hours a week, and are still unable to pay their bills, have food at the end of the month, can't pay for health care or education, we are undermining the foundation of our collective beliefs. We are undermining our families, and we are undermining our communities. In many other countries with inadequate wages, those inadequate wages are offset by the provision of public health services, free or subsidized child care, subsidized housing, and public transportation. Here in Oregon, we are largely telling poor women and women heads of household who are poor to make it on their own. The consequences fall on women and children first, and they fall on our communities and our way of life in the long run. Poverty used to be a transitory experience. Many of us felt it when we were students, and that kind of transitory experience is now not the case. Thank you. Please support the raise, and the commissions will help if we are able.
Thank you.
Dear Chairs, Demroy and Holby and committee members, my name is Tai Romano, and I'm here to share why reasonable wage is important to me. First off, I'm a member of APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network Oregon, and also currently in the Asia Pacific Islander Community Leadership Institute. In this program, we focus on leadership development and finding ways to improve our communities. I'm also a member of the Ukrainian National Community of Oregon. These are my volunteer activities I'm proud of. For my work, I make $11 an hour in a federal job. With this income, I have just enough to provide more for my family, a little bit. Even everything I earn with my wife goes to visiting and our kids' education. I came here to Oregon for a better life and so that we don't have to worry anymore. Before this, we were refugees trying to escape persecution, discrimination, oppression, and terror and war. I am very blessed to call Oregon my new home. But I'm worried about being homeless since people cannot afford to stay in their homes anymore. We live in an apartment currently, but someday I would like to buy our first home in the United States. I ask you to please increase the wage so that workers like me can achieve the American dream and provide for our families. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. Okay.
Chairs Dembrough and Hovey and members of the committee. My name is Sophia Stanford. I'm here from Northeast Portland, and I'm here tonight to testify in support of raising the minimum wage in Oregon. My story is somewhat unique. I'm a transgender woman who moved to Oregon last summer from California because it's more affordable than the Bay Area and has similar protections for transgender people and inclusive health care coverage. I am 36 years old. On paper, I look very employable. I have over 12 years in training in college as an R&D pilot and in spaceflight. However, I am struggling to gain employment in my profession due to lack of acceptance and outright discrimination many transgender people experience. No one will hire me, an experience that unfortunately is not unique for transgender people across the country. In the meantime, I have been working in the service industry since coming to Oregon, first as a dishwasher at a vegan restaurant and then a full-time seasonal sales at Sears. Both jobs paid over the minimum wage, which makes it next to impossible to live on. Regrettably, my job ended after the holidays. I'm looking for work again. I rent a room for $5.50 a month and continue to try to find employment commensurate with my training and have years of debt from health care bills and a school tab of over $300,000 that have followed me to Oregon. I desperately need to make more than $9.25 an hour in order to survive. It's wonderful to be a state that works hard to create greater acceptance for transgender people who disproportionately live in poverty. Help lift us out of poverty, ensure that we have access to living wages, and pass a significant increase in the minimum wage this session. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophia.
Chairs Dembrough and Holvey and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony in support of raising Oregon's minimum wage. My name is Bruce Humphreys, and I'm a registered nurse working in the Bend area and a proud member leader of the Oregon Nurses Association. With over 13,000 members, Oregon nurses make up the largest portion of Oregon's healthcare workforce. working in almost every healthcare setting, from large hospitals to clinics, school-based health centers, and community-based public health. It is through these diverse experiences providing patient care in our state that nurses have come to recognize raising the minimum wage is not merely an economic issue, but a critical matter of public health. According to a recent report released by the Oregon Health Equity Alliance, entitled Mend the Gap in 2014, low-income Oregonians between 138 and 200% of the poverty line, those not eligible for Medicaid, were twice as likely as higher-income Oregonians to be uninsured and without access to health care. Moreover, Oregon nurses understand that when workers are paid a fair living wage, they are both happier and healthier as a result. Raising families out of poverty can help have enduring health benefits in our communities, including healthier births, reduced chronic disease rates, and longer lives. Studies today repeatedly show that income levels are directly linked to serious diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and arthritis. In terms of mental health impacts, people living in poverty are also now more than twice as likely to face severe depression in households with stable income. On a personal note, in addition to working as a registered nurse, I'm also a parent of a recent college graduate. My daughter graduated from Southern Oregon University in 2011 and entered a post-recession workforce that requires her to work three jobs in order to have enough income to provide her with basic food, rent, and gas. For these reasons, I strongly urge your action in passing a significant minimum wage increase for our state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, all of you.
Nancy Hadel, Craig Brewer, Sharla Richards, and Doug Rogers, please.
And on deck, we should have Christine Eckert, Bill Youngren, Jack Herbert, and Matt Marino.
Thank you. Chair Denbrough, Chair Holvey, and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Heidel from Ontario, and I'd like to tell you about one of the experiences that we had there. Our representative, Cliff Bentz, organized a county open meeting to invite anybody in the county, Malheur County, that wanted to come to express their opinions about the minimum wage to come to the meeting and express them. There were almost 300 people there, which is very big. That's one of our towns, quite honestly. And there was not one person there who testified in favor of the minimum wage. Not one out of 300. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have minimum wage workers. That means that our workers are glad to have a job, because you see, if they live in Idaho, they get paid $7.25. And we have over a 5% unemployment rate where we live. And Idaho has only a 3%. I currently work as an adjunct professor at Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, where I live. I've taught part-time there for 8 years. I have master's credits, and I'm currently making $17.65 an hour with no benefits. I'm sure that people who live on this side of the state who teach at colleges make much more money than I do. But we are not the same. And if I don't want my job, I know there's somebody from Idaho that's very willing to take it, because they are paid $2 less an hour, minimum wage. Their professional jobs are also paid less, too. What is this going to mean to education if we increase the minimum wage? We all know that education budgets are 75% personnel wages. And are we going to devalue education like that by making it not possible for people to go on in their education, making our classrooms bigger with more students, cutting programs, and cutting services to our students? Let's not do a disservice to our students, and let's have an educated state. I know that's something we're all working for. Thank you very much.
Chair Dumbrell and Holvey, I am Craig Ferrari. I'm from Nessa, Oregon. I've traveled over 400 miles today on icy roads because the choice you are about to make will have a huge impact on our community, our businesses, and my family. Our competition truly is 300 yards away from us. We employ in both Oregon and Idaho, and we pay $7.25 an hour to families that live locally in that area and are not guest workers. So that is available to us. Oregon is working hard to get rid of its carbon imprint. Locally grown accomplishes that by less travel, less transportation down the road. By doing this, we will make local produce much harder to come by competing with other places and have a larger carbon imprint. We grow 150 acres of asparagus. We take about 135 employees who work for us from March 15th to June 20th, 7 days a week. This work comes when onion packing sheds and field work is hard to come by. Each spear of asparagus is moved by hand 7 times. It is incredibly labor intense. We grow in Oregon and pack in Idaho to keep it profitable. If the minimum wage goes up, we will be forced to tear out our asparagus and no longer employ these people who are our friends, our neighbors, and our community. We will no longer produce these high-value crops, which are labor-intense. There will be a larger carbon print, there will be less state revenue, and more people will become unemployed. Help us by making our area more successful by carving us out and letting us have an opportunity to succeed. Thank you.
Chair Holby and Senator Dembro and members of the committee, I sincerely thank you for your time, because I'm sure at this point you would rather be headed home tonight, so I appreciate your listening ear. When I left my home this morning, it was 5 a.m. My children were sleeping in their beds, and the sun was still behind the horizon and hadn't risen yet. And I started my travels to Salem, which was some 400 miles away from my home and my business, which lies on the Oregon-Idaho border. I reflected on what part my voice and my concerns would play as I came to this faraway place. I would ask you to not stop listening, because my voice comes from a rural portion of Oregon. We are equal citizens of the state of Oregon. And my 84-year-old father started his business here some 55 years ago. And I won't lie that today I feel somewhat betrayed by my home state. This state and the governor pride themselves in representing so many minorities, many of which have been represented in this room tonight. And I ask you to remember that all minorities, including those of Eastern Oregon and rural Oregon, deserve a voice that is heard, respected, and plays a role in your decisions. I shouldn't have to leave my home at 5 a.m. and travel across snow and ice-covered roads to attend a short session for you to even think about rural Eastern Oregon. My family is real, just like yours. My children are real, and my business is real. It would be ideal if we could just raise minimum wage and reduce poverty, but our own history from the state of Oregon shows that that isn't real. Please remember that the market simply won't bear this middle ground labor increase. We operate on a 6 to 8% margin. This minimum wage increase would be a 10% increase for our expenses, which allows us to have no choice but to move our business to Idaho. Thank you.
Thank you. And could you state your name for the record?
Sharla Richards.
Thank you, Sharla.
Chair Dembro and Holvia, thank you for letting me be here. My name is Doug Rogers, and I live just down the street. But I share the same concerns with my friends here who have traveled so far away. I've owned a small cafe and been an hourly worker and a salaried manager, and I've seen both sides of this issue, and I'm here to present my perspective. A person's pay should reflect their value to the company. I know a well-trained, hard-working guy who was rewarded with a promotion and wage adjustment for his contributions to the company he worked for. How will he feel when an unskilled worker off the street is paid about the same wage without first having made any contributions? That takes the incentive out of my friend's desire to work with his employer to make the business a success in the community. After all, he said, why bother going the extra mile when the state is going to pull everyone up behind you through unfunded mandates? And don't forget, businesses don't really pay $15 an hour. Besides health care and sick pay, the employers pay a portion of Medicare, workman's comp, and Social Security. Federal and state unemployment taxes also need to be calculated to find the true hourly wage. Some have suggested that businesses can adjust, and they are correct. With my cafe, my choices for adjusting were to raise prices, cut hours, layoffs, downsize, and finally to close the business. I saw an excited Pro 15 supporter exclaiming, businesses can afford to give us $15 an hour because they have millions of dollars.
I looked at my wife and said, where'd you hide it? I don't know where it is. And sure, we had so many, but my nest egg was not perpetual, and neither is the reserve funding for any other business. Oregon is not an easy place to start and maintain a business. Look at all the for sale signs on empty storefronts. Every one of these spaces represents someone in the unemployment line. Forcing employers to pay more is not conducive to helping them stay in business.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, panel. So we have Christine Eckert, Bill Youngren, Jack Herbert, and Matt Marino. Would you come up, please?
And on deck, Susan Barton, Roberta Vanderwan, Joaquin Alcozer, and Jenna Young, or Dana Young, excuse me.
Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Christine Eckert. I am a home care worker. My job is so very important for our community. It is important because we are in a time where people need a lot of help. There are a lot of people that are housebound out there that need this help. I have been a home care worker for 18 years. I have one client who has been eating, who wasn't even eating at all after his wife died. He had begun to have effects with his health. He also had no one to come in and care for him. He was delivered Meals on Wheels, which I happened to be a volunteer of and saw that need. So I went in and became his caregiver. And after that, I've been helping many people in my community. And without this help, these people who are elderly or disabled cannot go out without eating, bathing, or shopping for their basic needs. Imagine if you were a mother or a grandfather at home without help. This job I do is very important. Not only do the elderly and the disabled need to help, but so do we. The workers who care for them. We can't even afford to keep up our cars running or even put gas in them. It is impossible to survive on less than $15 an hour. Most home care workers who are not working through the state are making barely above minimum wage, and it is impossible to meet our needs with those kind of low wages. Now it's your turn to show us that you care. Please raise the minimum wage. Thank you.
Chair Dembrow and Holby and members of the committee, my name is Bill Youngren, and I'm a certified nurse's assistant at Mandel Children's Hospital at Legacy Emanuel. I'm also a member of SEIU Local 49. As a CNA, I've spent the last 26 years of my career working in pediatrics, regularly seeing the ramifications of low wages in Oregon. Where I work, the PICU, Pediatric Intensive Care Unit, you only see kids who are severely sick and somewhat make it. Even with their child's life on the line, I've seen families look at the bill and ask themselves, what can we afford? I have seen them ask for a la carte menus. They are trying to pare down while their kid is in critical care because they know they can only do the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. I frequently see people who are struggling, having to make a choice that boils down to whether or not they can afford to save their child's life. Mm-hmm. It is truly cruel. If these are decisions parents are making when it's often a matter of life or death, I can't help but imagine that similar decisions are being made when it comes to housing, transportation, and food. No parent who works full-time should have to choose between providing a roof, a meal, or life-saving health care for their child. If families in Oregon are making these decisions every day, raising the minimum wage to a level that truly provides self-sufficiency is critical to making this a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Emperor. Jack, welcome.
Hi. Thank you for being here and listening to us. My name is Jack Herbert. I'm retired from a public service job with DEQ. Tier one on PERS. You know, tier one is way gone. Times are changing. My 29-year-old son and other young people and most people who do not have established careers or businesses are living in a third world country. That's life for them. And we let that happen. Those who go to college get debts they can't pay off, or they have to drop out of college, and lots can't afford college. You can move us, many of these people, out of the third world by moving to a $15 an hour minimum wage and hire and allowing, in Portland, and allowing localities to raise the minimum wage if they need to, and also to impose local rent control. You need to allow that. because, you know, the rent control is going to clobber the wage increase. I mean, the rent explosion. And the increase in income will obviously increase businesses and allow more people to be hired. And you don't have to take my word for it. You know, there are plenty of studies out there, so it's not a matter of argument. We'll also, you know, this will also cut costs for the Oregon Health Plan and other welfare. And you will get increased tax revenue. From that revenue, then you can you need to get creative and use it well. You need those fixed people on fixed incomes, you now have more money, and you need to use it for them, those ones that aren't being helped by the minimum wage. And you need to give us better education. The Great Depression of the 30s didn't end until we got so scared by the bombing of Pearl Harbor that we pooled all the savings we'd been hanging on to and hired ourselves and put ourselves to work and got the economy we could have had all along if we just had the courage to do it together. So raising our minimum wage similarly injects the money into the economy and gets it circulating. What does this mean here?
I think you're out of time.
Out of time?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd say that our growers' problems, like those of our mills and our forests, the logging, those are due to the dropping of tariff protections, which we need so that they don't compete unfairly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Matt? Members of the committee, my name is Matt Marino. I work as a canvasser in Portland. I'm disappointed in the governor's plan. I see it as a cynical attempt to divide workers between urban and rural. The governor said that raising the wage won't solve the housing crisis in Portland. I'd like to focus on this. I've volunteered with this campaign for over a year, and I think that the strength of our movement stems from the intersectionality our demand has with other movements. Last year, while working as a canvasser, we organized a union. We fought for 15 by voting yes for the union. It shouldn't surprise you that workers who bring in the union face retaliation. We at 15 now have been pushing to repeal preemption and restore local control to cities. Other groups are fighting to lift the preemption law on inclusionary zoning, but no one is making a credible push for rent control. Due to arbitrary rent increases, tenants face the same discriminatory practices that union members face in the workplace. They use the no-cause evictions to discriminate against vulnerable groups in our community and force people out into economically blighted neighborhoods. When I canvass in Portland, in Senator Dembro's district, in Rob Noce's district, in Representative Fagan's district, people tell me that they don't think that the city and the legislature really represent them. They tell me that they think that the legislature and City Hall is in the pocket of the developers and the business alliance. This needs to change. Our movement is about building a movement of workers around to tackle all kinds of issues and to win real material gains that haven't been seen in decades. And we see this all across the country. And I think that I take a lot of a heart in it, that people are standing up and fighting.
Thank you for being here.
Susan Barton, Roberta Vanderwall, Joaquin Alcozer, and Dana Young.
And on deck, we should have Jennifer Maynard, Marissa Torres, Ariel Botta, and Allison Acosta Vega.
Chair Holvey, Chair Dembrow, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Susan Barton. I am from Nyssa, Oregon, 480 plus miles and one time zone away from this location.
Yes.
Senators and representatives, I am concerned. I am concerned about my community. I am concerned about empty buildings. I am concerned about businesses that are struggling. I'm concerned about my neighbors. I took pictures of Logan Skeen as he harvested onions this year. It's a beautiful sight. I love my community, and I love the farmers who put the food on your table and who feed the world, literally. I'm concerned about the businesses and the employers in my community. I'm concerned that they give back so much to our community, and yet so much is asked of them. And they have employees that they are concerned about. And I'm concerned for those employees that are going to lose their jobs. I'm concerned for our seniors. We don't have public transportation in Nyssa, Oregon. We have one grocery store. A grocery store is owned by a corporation that is based out of Idaho. They have two stores in Idaho and the one store in Nyssa. I'm concerned because AgriService, which is a business in Nyssa that provides farm implements and service to those farm implements, has broken ground in Idaho. They're moving. Another empty business in Nyssa. Oh, this is not good business. We've worked so hard in economic development with our chambers and our businesses to bring in new businesses, to expand the ones that exist and bring others that are looking for a great place to settle. And what better place than Oregon? From the Snake River to the shore of the Pacific, this is not good business. It's not a good business decision, and I am concerned. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Hi, Chairman Dembro and Hawley. Thank you so much, committee. My name is Roberta Vanderwall, and I'm the city manager of Nyssa. Nyssa is a small town of about 3,270 people, so very, very small. I come as a little bit of a different perspective than what you've heard all day or this evening. Number one, you know, the minimum wage was not created to sustain a family. It wasn't made so that you didn't have to do something else. So I think that the approach that everybody's talked about tonight, number one, is wrong. I mean, we all started at a minimum wage, but it's wrong, and we can't sustain a family or a mother with a child on that wage. But that's not what it was here for. So as a city, we employ about 23 people that are full-time and part-time. The impact that any wage increase will be devastating to our community. I'm here to support our businesses of Nyssa and Malheur County. The state and the federal government has come into Nyssa and has mandated that the city put in a new wastewater treatment plant in the amount of $8 million plus. Okay? Then they come in and mandate, the EPA says, that our arsenic is too bad and our levels are too high. So now we have to put in a $6.2 million plant to fix the water we've all drank for 50, 80 years. The water didn't change. The rules changed. So if all these businesses that have talked to us today and talked to you move to Idaho because they can't afford to operate in Oregon, who are going to pay those bills? So now the state's now mandating a higher wage, a minimum wage. We're not going to have people there. Nyssa will go away. So thank you for your time.
Chairman Hovey and Chairman Dembro. Okay, my name is Joaquin Alcacer, and I've been a farm labor contractor for about 34 years. Last year, through my payroll, 270 people went through my payroll. And from what I see with this minimum wage going up, I bet you anything, I'm going to be cut down to three quarters or down to nothing. Or I will have to follow my fellow farmers to Idaho also. And also about the gentleman that said Idaho doesn't pay $7.25, I have to say to him that today, as I was traveling here, I have two ladies from Idaho that were working for me in Ontario for the minimum wage, $9.25. What I see that's going to happen now in the Nyssa, Ontario, Oregon, is a lot of houses are going to be left because people aren't going to be able to afford to carry the mortgage. Just this year alone, four of my employees bought homes. And right now, I know they're thinking that, oh, great, the minimum wage is going to go up. We can all buy. And they're probably going to start buying. And next year, if this minimum wage goes up, the rock is really going to hit them. And so they're going to find out, where do I work now? How am I going to make my payment? And we're going to go back to square one, a bunch of houses for sale in Nyssa in Ontario. So you know, it all boils down to it. You know, this side of the state is one thing. Our side of the state is another. We're comfortable with where we're at right now. Like I said, I got to say goodbye, but support us if you can, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, good evening, Chair Dembro, Chair Holvey. My name is Dana Young, and I'm the president at Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, Oregon. It is really clear to me that we have a very diverse state with very differing needs. And I respect everyone's opinion and everyone's truth, because this is everyone's truth that you're hearing this evening. An increase in minimum wage to $15 per hour across the state will increase wages at Treasure Valley Community College by $518,375 the first year. When adding payroll benefits, wage compression, and PERS benefit increases to this number, we will see that escalate to nearly $650,000. In addition, with the loss of local property tax revenue due to pending mass exodus of businesses, this could be an increase in expenses and a loss in revenues totaling nearly $1 million. In fact, you've heard it here tonight in a recent town hall meeting. You're hearing our onion growers, hardware store owners, restaurants, grocery store owners, all talking about getting out of here. So getting out of here, either going to Idaho or just shutting down businesses altogether. The direct impact to Treasure Valley Community College will mean cutting academic programs, laying off employees, raising tuition and fees, costs to students, all at the same time that we are working very hard in Malheur County to raise the college-going culture, as we have a high rate of low-income students who are first generation, whose parents have never attended college. We're working very hard at that. I don't want to raise tuition and fees for them, but if my expenses go up, I cut programs and raise tuition and fees. You know the story. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thanks for being here. So Jennifer Maynard, Marissa Torres, Ariel Bada, and Allison Acosta-Vega, please.
On deck, John Dillon, Charles Massey, Mike McCarthy, Elena Turpin.
Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Ariel Bada, and I am a home care worker. I live here in Salem and provide home care to 4 clients in Salem. I'm here to testify in supporting of raising the minimum wage. I have been providing care for about 18 years, and I am paid about $12 an hour, which is high for home care pay, but still not enough to live on. I live in a manufactured home, and unfortunately the rent has just gone up $400, and my rent is down more than my income, which I have had to rent 2 of my rooms out just to make ends meet. I worry all the time about being able to pay my electric and other bills, and have had to pawn jewelry for enough money to pay them from time to time. I have a 13-year-old car I use for work. Last year, I was just able to afford tires on it, and in August, the transmission went out. I can't fix it right now. This means that sometimes I have to walk 3.5 hours to get to my client. That's just one way. Or if I can ride my bike, if it's nice, it's 1.5 hour bike ride. When I need to take my clients to grocery stores or to a doctor's appointment, I'm lucky if I can borrow my mom's car if she's not using it for work. My clients sometimes tell me that they think the pay for home care workers is too low, and sometimes try to give me extra money. Unfortunately, not being able to take it, it does affect me and them. Other home care workers I have no input because pay is too low. And when clients have to have new caregivers, it's hard on them. Even their families get confused and new home care workers. If minimum wage is increased, it means that I can worry less and pay my bills and have more of a security.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself to the record, please.
My name is Marissa Torres, and I am a social work student at the University of Portland. I'm here today because I've experienced what it's like to grow up with a parent who earns low wages. When I was 3 years old, my father left me and my mother, and she was working for a law firm at the time, but she was a secretary working for minimum wage. My father took the car, so we had no transportation when he left. We couldn't pay the bills anymore, so we moved in with my aunt and uncle. After that, we were placed on the list for housing, and we lived in a motel for 4 to 6 months. Then we moved into an apartment, and later a house, all subsidized housing. It took us a long time to get where we are today. During the summers, I still go back and live with my mom, and then try to get a job to help her pay the bills. Home is Nevada, where the minimum wage is only $7.25. During the school year, I have been a full-time student so far, but the debt is starting to pile up. Student loans are the only way I can afford school. I remember when I was applying to college, my mom cried because she realized that she couldn't help me pay for it. So we both took loans out. I think I have 5 different loans to pay off when I graduate. I'm trying to find a job, but I haven't been able to find one yet. Right now, I try to work on campus doing everything I can. Maybe at a local grocery store. Sometimes I feel like I don't belong here because I have no money. It's really hard. If my mom had been making more money, we certainly could have been afforded bills. I think it's important for people to know the struggle. It's not as easy as just getting a job and getting an income and actually taking care of your family, because one person working for a family of 4 on low wages just won't be able to make it. I urge you to pass the minimum wage increase. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Maynard. I'm a care provider. I've worked for United Cerebral Palsy for nearly 7 years, doing important life-saving, independence-fostering, humanitarian work at the unhealthy wage of $10.35 an hour. I'm a McNair Scholar with a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology and 20 years in hospitality. I'm curious about people, empathetic, and skilled. I want to do ethical, meaningful work. I am also adaptable and resilient, but that doesn't pay the bills, nor does my complacency with a poverty-level wage. The catch-22 here is that moving up at UCP or into other positions in the field would only land me deeper in poverty, with greater time commitments and a nominal 25-cent raise, even as a manager. I want to do ethical, meaningful work, but you need to raise my wage so I can be healthy, effective, and have a reasonable quality of life for myself and my children. $10.35 means that I suffer. When I get sick, I can't afford the copay for my health care, let alone healthy food at times and access to safe living spaces. $10.35 equates to poverty, which has led me to live with black mold. I had to begin going to allergy and asthma clinic due to these living environments, but couldn't continue due to cost. I became depressed, but could only attend one appointment with a mental health counselor through Kaiser due to their limited availability, being Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, when I was scheduled to work. I was experiencing the symptoms of learned helplessness due to the fabric and systems of our society being blind to reality. I started a second job with the county and then a third driving for Radio Cab. My client with the county had a bipolar episode, firing all of her providers. Luckily, at that time, it was pre-Uber, and I was able to save money for the first time in over 5 years. Mm-hmm. Working 88 hours a week is the only thing that keeps my rent paid, bills at bay, and food on my table. It's been a marathon of extreme endurance. This is your chance to support the growth of middle-class Americans and, in turn, supporting our already marginalized citizens in the disabilities communities with retaining quality care providers. Thank you for being agents
Thank
of
you.
Change and raising my wage to $15 an hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Dillon, Charles Massey, Mike McCarthy, and Elena Turpin.
While they're coming up, on deck we'll have Patty Campbell-Schmidt, Rebecca Alexander, Choya Atkinson-Stevens, and Sam Carroll.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman, Mike McCarthy. I'm a farmer from Hood River County. I raise apples, pears, cherries, cows, and hay, and I'm totally opposed to an increase in the minimum wage. There's really three reasons. An increase in the minimum wage will cause the demise of family farms in Hood River County. No studies have been done on the impact of these wage increases on family farms in the state of Oregon. Fruit farmers in Hood River County cannot alter their prices to recover these increased costs. And tree fruits are some of the most labor-intensive crops that are grown in the United States. We grow a labor-intensive crop. We plant by hand. We train our trees by hand. We tie them to wires by hand. We prune by hand. We cut out bacterial infections by hand. We thin by hand, and we harvest by hand. An increased cost of $13.50 an hour would mean that the average farmer in Hood River County has an additional $90,000 per year in labor costs. There are not profits to cover this. That what that means is of all the family farms in Hood River County, which is one of the smallest counties in the state, it's really very few farmers, a small amount of farmland. But for those farmers, it's $21 million a year in additional costs. Those are additional costs. There's no profits to cover that. Farmers would not be making the minimum wage of $9.25 if this were to occur. We cannot just adjust our prices. Fruit farmers cannot adjust their prices for new labor costs. We cannot tack on these new costs. We cannot sell our fruit in the Portland market and just ask for more. We have to sell in world markets. We're a commodity market. We get what the market dictates. We get what Walmart will pay. We get what China will pay. We get what Mexico will pay. None of the buyers care what our minimum wage is. None of them will let us add more costs. This attack on the family farm will cause a takeover by large corporate farms, and we'll lose a lot of family farms in Hood River. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Chair Dimbrough and Holvey, thank you. My name is John Dillon. I'm the publisher of the Argus Observer in Ontario. I, too, traveled almost 400 miles today, and again, we'll turn around and travel back tonight. The newspaper is the daily newspaper in Ontario, and we are lucky enough to have a press, and I'm here to give you, share with you an example of how any increase would equal a loss of jobs. We are unlike a lot of newspapers today. We still have a press. We still print our daily newspaper. We still print our two weekly newspapers. And we also have commercial printing for two small newspapers in Oregon and one in Idaho. For the last 12 years, the newspaper in Nampa, which is 35 miles away, has presented me with a bid to print our newspaper. It would be the shutting my press down, removing my press, and mailroom, which is the packaging of the newspaper. For 12 years, I've been able to say we can still do it cheaper. I've wanted to protect the jobs that we have. As the Oregon minimum wage increase, every year that bid comes, and my cost difference gets less and less. This last bid I have was pretty even. Any cost would increase in minimum wage would, I would probably lose 15 employees. They're not all minimum wage employees. I think I would have 9 minimum wage employees and 6 higher wage employees, 2 managers even. So I would encourage you to consider Mount Hare County and what it would do to us, how I've tried to protect my jobs and my employees, and thank you for your time.
Chair Dimbrough, Chair Holvey, my name is Elena Turpin, and I am the Director of Membership for the Kaiser Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here for our small businesses. I heard from several small businesses, and I'm just going to give you a small sampling of what they said. This is James Taylor. He owns an automotive shop, Jet Automotive. If minimum wage went up, I would have to raise my rate to my customers by a minimum of $10 an hour just to cover the cost, increase wages, taxes, and workman comp. In doing this, it would be a strain on many of my customers who are on fixed incomes and would no longer be able to afford to fix their vehicles. Let's see. James Marshall owns the Delaney Madison Grill. He employs 30 to 35 people depending on the season. 80% of those are making minimum wage. It's about 600 hours a week. They are barely making it right now. He says he has not taken a salary since he took over the business a year and a half ago. The sick leave mandate alone has put a huge burden on their business, and to add an increase in minimum wage would put them out of business. This is Chris Romaine. They have a clean energy comfort. It's a heating and air conditioning. And it says, currently, we do not use minimum wage as the base wage. We start new trainees out at $12 an hour and move them up quickly as they gain the necessary experience. This method allows us to transition people from outside our industry and train them on our trade and hopefully get them started in a career. If the minimum wage was raised, it would lessen our ability to use this training and hiring method and therefore keep people who we may have hired and started on a career path from ever landing that entry-level position. We would turn away people who don't have experience for those that do. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairs, Dembro and Halvey, thanks for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Sam Carroll. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the YMCA of Marion and Polk Counties. And it's a very difficult position to be in a nonprofit where we serve people who struggle at minimum wage, yet we serve those who struggle at the middle income bracket. Our organization, with this move to $13 an hour, will have to generate an additional $2,000 a day in net income to still provide the services that we provide to children and families, early childhood care, and after-school programs, summer care. This is a huge impact, especially on a nonprofit with little or no margin when it comes to the end of the year. So I know it's a very difficult decision you have to make. However, please consider everything, and especially the nonprofits that serve the community and serve those who have need. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you very much, all of you. So Patty Campbell-Schmidt, Rebecca Alexander, Choya Atkinson-Stevens, and I didn't call Josh Hanks, but if he's in the room, if he could come up, that would be great.
And on deck, Matt Lizignoli, Tyler Wagstaff, Spencer Raylan, and Dennis Bolins.
And colleagues, before you get started, you know, our hope had been to end this hearing at 8:30. We've got another page on each side, so. Certainly, if you need to leave, we understand. We'll keep this going. I think we should be finished by 9. Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening, Chairs Dembro and Holby and the committee. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify. My name for the record is Choya Atkinson-Stevens, and I work at the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. I'm here on behalf of my boss, our executive director, Vanessa Timmons. She was unable to make it at the last minute. I'm here to... I want to tell you a little bit about what we do. We support the domestic and sexual violence programs all around the state. So we make sure that the advocates who do direct service to survivors of abuse have what they need to do their jobs well. I'm testifying in favor of raising the minimum wage. In particular, I speak in support of the bill advocating a state minimum of $13.50 that includes restaurant, farm, and domestic workers, and that allows municipalities to set their own minimum wage at rates higher than state minimums. My recommendations are based on decades of experience supporting survivors of domestic and sexual violence and also supporting advocates who work in this field. Most advocates are women, many survivors are women, and many are people of color, two groups disproportionately represented in low-wage jobs and affected by poverty. I think earlier we heard Robin Morris Collin from the Oregon Commission for Black Affairs make that very plain to us. Minimum wage is an issue of justice, and it is an issue of safety. For survivors of intimate partner violence, not having financial resource is often a primary barrier to leaving abusive relationships and getting safe. Poor people, women in particular, are not more likely to experience abuse, but abuse is more likely to confine them. Getting out and getting free, pursuing a self-determined life, requires sustainable income, and once someone leaves abuse, a living wage is one of the most important elements to staying safe and free.
In summary, I would like to emphasize my support for raising the minimum wage and the necessity of including all workers, especially those most vulnerable to economic exploitation who are sometimes exempt from such protections. Survivors of intimate partner and sexual violence need this raise.
Thank you.
And advocates need this raise. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Troy.
My name is Rebecca Alexander. I work for Bradley Engel, a domestic violence organization serving survivors in Portland, Oregon. And I'm going a little off script today, and I'll be a little brief because I'm not feeling very well. But I just wanted to react to some of the comments that I've heard earlier this evening. In particular, the comments of the city manager of Nisa, Oregon, who referenced that the minimum wage was never intended to be a living wage for families. I saw a lot of nods around the room around that statement, and I've heard it before. It's troubling to me, though, because regardless of the intent, that is certainly the impact. What we know is that in the state of Oregon, the average minimum wage worker is a woman. She's about 35 years old, and she's very likely to raise children. That is the population that we're most likely to see at Bradley Engel, and I can tell you that financial security is the number one reason that people don't come to us, that don't seek services and support to get safety. This is a life and death issue for the people that we serve, and we have a responsibility to provide all people in our community with a true choice, especially when they're working a full-time job. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Be well.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the chairs and the committee for having us here and allowing us to speak. For the record, my name is Joshua Hanks. I'm here with Oregonians for 15. I'm a retail worker in Beaverton, and I live in East Portland. I'm not in an entry-level position. I'm a supervisor, but I do make less than $11 an hour. And like many my age, I'm saddled with student loan debt without benefiting financially from a college education. Without my partner shouldering part of the bills, I would not make it. Working people in this state and throughout the nation are struggling to scrape by while corporations make fabulous profits. I support a ballot initiative to implement a $15 wage within 3 years. From Portland to the coast in eastern Oregon, workers are struggling, and we all deserve at least 15. The local exemption must also be lifted, which the legislator is not proposing. I support a ballot initiative that does this. A common theme in opposition to an increased wage is that businesses will relocate or automate. This is nothing more than economic intimidation. These economic interests are holding the whole state hostage, and we cannot let them threaten or coerce us. They're forcing us to accept poverty wages or unemployment and even more grinding poverty. If that's the freedom of choice offered under capitalism, I won't accept it. I've heard an increased wage described as socialist redistribution of wealth, but let's remember that it is working people who create all wealth. The most massive transfer of wealth in history has been from workers who produce all value to capitalists who own the means of production and appropriate the surplus value we create. An increased minimum wage merely gives back to workers a small portion of the mountain of value that we create. Beyond an increased wage, working people in Oregon must fight for a massive program of public housing. Private developers have failed to provide affordable housing, especially in the Portland metro area. We need a jobs program that can also help repair our vulnerable infrastructure, and a single-payer health insurance program that places healthcare decisions into the hands of doctors and patients, not profit-driven corporate bureaucrats. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Senator Denborough and Representative Holvey and committee members. My name is Patricia Campbell-Schmidt, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Center for Christian Voices, a nonprofit faith-based organization that seeks to activate Christians around issues of social and economic justice. I have served for 40 years as a Presbyterian minister, and 36 of those years was in the state of Oregon. It was in 1983 that my eyes were opened to the plight of the working poor in our state. I had just attended my first board meeting of SNOCAP, which is a social service agency in East Multnomah County, providing emergency food and clothing to hundreds and thousands of people in that area. A statistic that our director shared that night really, really caught my attention and rattled my soul and my heart. He shared that between 80 and 90% of the families seeking emergency assistance from SNOCAP were working one, if not two, or more jobs. My first reaction was, this just can't be. I was young and naive. This just can't be. How can people who are working full-time or more not have enough money to feed and clothe their families? And then I got it. These fathers and mothers were not being paid a living wage. Yes, they were earning too much to qualify for food stamps, yet not enough to adequately provide for their families. And I was horrified and embarrassed that something like that, this, could happen in our country. OCCV, Oregon Center for Christian Voices, and thousands of Christians from diverse faith traditions believe in a God who has a heart for the neediest and the marginalized people in our society. A God who looks with favor upon governments that establish economic and social policies that provide opportunities for all to flourish.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony tonight.
Thank you all four of you.
Matt Lizignoli, Tyler Wagstaff, Spencer, Braylon, and Dennis. I think I butchered his name last time. Dennis couldn't read it. Couldn't remember it.
Okay, well, they're coming up on deck. We have Jeff Klotke, Matt Newell Ching, Christina James, and Heidi Cypress.
Good evening, Chairman. I'll speak briefly. We're all tired. What a wage increase will mean will be meaning the younger generation that I employ that are in high school, give them a summertime job to hopefully save for some college. They will be the
introduce
first.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. I'm Spencer Fromm from Ontario, Oregon. I'm very tired. Been up since 3:30 your time. So we're going to be cutting those who I'm hoping will be the next generation to come in and own our businesses. The next place I'll look to cut will be the older, not able to work as well people. An increase in wage is not going to help the employees I have. I will be finding ways to replace them, and it won't be with other workers. So please, for their sake, do not increase minimum wage in Malheur County. Thank you.
My name is Dennis Bounds. I am a partner in a family farm. We have six, seven families that work with us also. Most of the wives will work in the summer with their kids sometimes. We try to keep the families busy, and so they can make a decent living for themselves. We provide housing for quite a few of them. This wage will change us drastically if it goes up that much. It's just too much at one time, I believe. We have to get up every day and go to work, and we have a lot of work to get done, and we stay there till it gets done. Sometimes what our value is not what we think it should be, because of crop prices and different things, but we just stick with it and keep going. We'd ask you that you would consider the wage, and at this time not to raise it for us.
Thank you. I'm Tyler Wagstaff. I'm also from Nyssa, Oregon, and I know you're probably tired of listening to us, but we appreciate you listening to us and letting us speak. We did come a long ways, and we appreciate that. I want you to know that. But just speaking from the heart, I love my little community. I grew up there. I want to stay there. And as a young, I'm 30 years old. I have a family, two kids. I want to stay there. I want to grow with my family. I want to grow our family farm. I'm kind of a second generation coming in with some other cousins. And we started at minimum wage, but we didn't want to work there forever. We wanted to work up, and that's what we've done. And if that's what minimum wage is to me, is something to work away from and be able to gain yourself respect and gain through the community or through your wherever you're working and raise your way up. And so because of that, if that does raise, we won't be able to keep as many families as Dennis said, and we'll have to let those families go. And I don't want to push those people out of our community, but they're going to have to go somewhere. They won't be have their kids won't be in school. They won't be able to be in our community buying groceries. It will affect way more than just jobs, as well as our whole area. And again, I love my community and I want to grow there. But as a young person wanting to grow a business, we may have to look elsewhere. And I appreciate your time and thank you for hearing us speak. But just remember that we are a little different over there, a little small community. It's a little different than Portland, and I know you realize that and appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler.
My name is Matthew Lisignoli, and I'm from Terrebonne, Oregon.
Unfortunately, you've heard the same thing over and over again, so a lot of my words have been stolen already. You've heard a lot of stories of hardship from the other side, and I guess I feel like mine and a lot of other people that are against the minimum wage, we have success stories. And it hasn't been easy. We've made sacrifices ourselves, and I feel like I've been successful, but if we do increase the minimum wage as proposed, it's going to be pretty rough for my business to continue. I grew up in Portland delivering newspapers when I was a kid until I could get a job at minimum wage, which was $1.25 then. So I got 40 years of effort and sacrifice, and today I own and operate a farm in Terrebonne, Oregon. I'm not from NHSSA, not that that's a bad thing, but I can't move across the border as easily. So we grow seed crops, and we operate a pumpkin patch and a corn maze over there. So during our harvest, we employ up to about 30 people. It's a good job. I really enjoy it. I paid for my own college. I raised my family. I did it all without any social assistance. I don't think anybody can tell me that it wasn't a struggle. I think I've been fortunate, but it's also been from a lot of effort. The challenge you face regarding the workers is to reward them for a hard day's work. And that should include the business owners also. We're not bad people. We're trying to work with these people. It shouldn't be us against them, but that appears how it's laying out. I don't envy your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you all for coming. So Jeff Klotke, Matt Newell Chang, Christina James, and Heidi Cypress, please.
And on deck, Adam McCarthy. Christine Diker, Kate Tarter, and Trevor Jams, or Treva Jam.
Hi, it's Oat Cypress. It's a hard name,
sorry,
I understand. So I would like to just say those men that were sitting there make it seem as though if you just work hard enough in this society, you can get to where I got. Well, they have different circumstances than many women and people of color in this country, so it's not the same. Pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, and I just want to put that on record because that's what it sounds like to me as a woman that's worked really hard in this society. Doesn't have the same kind of privilege that those men do, so I just wanted to start by saying that and clarifying that. So I'm with the Fight for 15 Coalition. I have been a low-wage single parent for 18-plus years. I understand better than some the constant stress of trying to support myself and a child on less than $15 an hour. I also worked for two small businesses for a total of 5 years, so I also understand the small business culture very well. And I want to raise a point that I haven't heard addressed up until this point. When large corporations refuse to pay their workers a living wage, taxpayers get stuck with the offset of this because low-wage workers have to then rely on public assistance just to make ends meet. And it's not about how hard they work, because working-class people work harder than anyone else in America to keep this country going. So that translates basically to taxpayers subsidizing large corporations to the tune of $153 billion a year. That's total injustice as far as I'm concerned. So this does not benefit small businesses, nor does it benefit low-wage workers. However, if the tax structure was changed to benefit small businesses so they could have access to more economic resources to pay workers a living wage, then these workers would have more money to spend in the local economy. And everyone knows that this is a consumer-driven economy. So we in the 5 for 15 Coalition demand, on behalf of all low-wage workers, and I would like to say I represent a lot of single-parent women in this fight, and we demand that you do the right thing and raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And I want to end by asking you, do you work for the low-wage workers of Oregon, who are the mass base of your voters, or do you work for the large corrupt corporations who continually exploit low-wage labor?
Thank you.
Ask yourselves that question.
Thank you, Heidi. Jeff?
Good evening, Chair Dembrough and all the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Clackey. I'm the president of Oregon AFSCME, and I offer this testimony on behalf of the 25,000 members of Oregon AFSCME, their families, and their communities, in support of raising the minimum wage for working Oregonians and in support of lifting the preemption on local communities. I also work at Home Forward, which is the housing authority that serves Multnomah County. I'm not here representing them, but that's the field in which I work. So I'd like to focus on housing in particular as a way to demonstrate why Oregonians so desperately need a raise and why communities need the ability to define for themselves living wage. Housing advocates and lenders tell us that no more than one-third or so of one's income should be spent on housing, meaning that a full-time minimum wage worker has around $400 per month to spend on an apartment or a mortgage payment. This is a very difficult situation in most parts of Oregon and virtually impossible in the Portland metropolitan region, among other places, and I'll return to that. And housing assistance programs don't have the resources to help everyone in need. Some waiting lists for housing assistance programs are estimated at between 5 and 15 years long. So how much the minimum wage needs to increase for a full-time worker to afford housing depends on where that worker lives. But the higher cost housing in Oregon is not limited to the Portland metropolitan area or inside the urban growth boundary. A recent MIT study suggests that the minimum wage in the counties of Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, and Yamhill, which is outside the urban growth boundaries, would right now, not 6 years from now, need to be around $1,550 just to afford housing. But the most expensive county for housing currently is Hood River County, which is also outside the urban growth boundary. Lifting the local preemption is vital to addressing economic variation throughout the state, not just inside the urban growth boundary. And it is one of Oregon AFSCME's top priorities that the minimum wage be increased in 2016 and the preemption on local communities be repealed. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jeff. Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Chairs Dembrough and Representative Chairs Dembrough and Holvey. My name is Matt Newell Ching. I'm the Public Affairs Director for Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. My colleague just spoke about housing. I want to talk a little bit about the state of hunger in Oregon. I think it's timely that on Monday we're going to recognize the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King, and I want to share a quote from him that he shared in a Nobel Peace Prize speech. He said, "I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits." And I want to talk about what it means in terms of dignity, in terms of low-wage work, because obviously there's a huge connection between low-wage work and people experiencing hunger in Oregon. We strongly believe that families that are engaged in full-time work should not experience poverty. Yet a full-time worker in Oregon earns just $19,240 per year. That's below 80% of the federal poverty line. It is simply not enough to make ends meet. It's not enough to put food on the table. It's not enough to provide adequate and safe housing for one's family. And let's be clear, just want to spend a little bit talking about who is hungry in Oregon. You may have different images in your minds about who is experiencing hunger. Over half of people experiencing hunger in Oregon, and these are folks that are skipping meals on a regular basis, over half the people experiencing hunger are people that are in the workforce. And the majority of those who are not are people with disabilities and seniors who can't work for various reasons. Before time expires, I do want to spend a little bit of time and honor the single moms that have come and testified today. Two-thirds of single moms who experience hunger are in the workforce, are working all day, working hard. Any parent here knows how hard it is to work. Imagine how hard it is to come home after a low-wage work and provide meals for your kids and maybe skip that meal. We're all tired here. We can empathize with that mom who has worked hard all day. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Ms. James, welcome.
Chairs Dembrough and Holvey, representatives and senators, thank you. I'm here representing Children First for
Please
Oregon.
Give your name.
I'm Christina James, and I'm here representing Children First for Oregon. I sit on their board. I am a mentor with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. I am a certified foster parent with DHS, and I work with several alternative high schools as a mentor. So I have a lot of opportunity to work with disadvantaged youth, and I see how they suffer when their parent or parents, working full-time, still cannot manage to meet their basic minimum needs. one parent working full-time at minimum wage still leaves a family of three in poverty. So many Americans are working at low wages that federal and state government spends yearly $1.7 billion in taxpayer money every year for financial supports. Since 2007, median rent has gone up 9%, and the median family income has dropped 7% in the same period. Oregon has the second highest rate of mothers with young children working in low-wage jobs, and that's currently at 26%. Child poverty has increased by more than 25% since before the recession, and has increased more than 10% just compared to 2009. So we are asking that the minimum wage of Oregon be increased and that you allow local officials to determine if a higher minimum wage is necessary in their areas as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you all.
Up next, I have Adam McCarthy, Christine Dekia, Kate Tarter, and Treva Gams. Boy.
Okay, and on deck we have Greg Delgado, Lon Otterby, Tabitha Jensen, and Cezanne Miller. We're getting there.
Chair Zembo, Holvey, committee members, thank you for your time this evening. I'm Adam McCarthy.
Move away from the mic just a little bit. Yeah. They're very sensitive.
I'm Adam McCarthy, a tree fruit producer from Hood River County. I'm a high-value specialty crop farmer, a category comprised primarily of crops where labor is the primary production input. To go back to my first course in microeconomics, an individual firm will hire workers until the marginal revenue product equals the wage rate. You've heard many examples this evening of the three options that this leaves businesses with when they face an increased wage. The first one is to raise the price for the goods or services it produces. I produce a product that competes in a global market. This is not an option for my business. The second, it can substitute equipment and technology for labor. This will continue to be my approach to maintain profitability, giving rising wages. But it translates to fewer jobs and less entry-level jobs for unskilled workers. At $15 an hour, how can I justify hiring an unskilled teenager, train them, and mentor them, only to have them work 6 to 8 weeks before returning to school? It doesn't work. How are we going to get new people into the workforce and train them to become productive members of the workforce? Finally, what's brought us to this point where thousands of Oregonians' only hope for economic relief resides in broad-stroke economic policy to raise the minimum wage? How do we stimulate the creation of higher-paying jobs, higher-paying family wage jobs, to make life better for Oregon's workforce in the long run? Raising the minimum wage is not the answer. Thank you.
Mr. Chairs, thank you for, and committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Christine Deeger, and I'm the executive director of the Kaiser Chamber of Commerce. I'm representing 376 employers, a few that are large employers, but mostly very small employers. The message is loud and clear from them that increasing the minimum wage will be devastating, hurtful, and many will close their businesses. The president of the Kaiser Chamber of Commerce is Bob Zielinski, owner of Scenic Valley Farm and Vineyard. He would be here to testify, but he needed to stay home with his wife for medical reasons. But he did ask me to share that a payroll of $750,000 is paid to farm his 2,500 acres just north of where we are here. Nobody is paid a minimum wage. The closest is being $11.50 an hour. He'll not treat people differently if the minimum wage is increased. These increases could cost him $250,000 in payroll. Profits won't pay for that. Bob estimates our groceries prices will go up 20%, or perhaps $20 to $30 a grocery trip. Raising the wage is not a positive thing. I also share another member's story, a smaller employee. He was a little reluctant to give his name just for the fact that he does need to keep customers coming through his doors. He didn't want to risk something going out to say that possibly he is against the minimum wage, where maybe they wouldn't come because he's supporting that. But he does say the minimum wage issue is huge for small businesses in Salem. It affects all customers. It affects consumers and business owners. It's not just the minimum wage earners that affects. Cooks, prep cooks, managers are all going to have to pay more because they are making currently $14 to $15 a wage. The biggest fault in this proposal is there is no tip credit even mentioned to go up with the heights.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Dumbrow and Holvey and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Kate Tarter. I own a very small business. It's called the Job Consultants Network. And for 7 years, I've helped people with disabilities get jobs. This year was a fantastic year because in 2014, the governor had signed in the act called Employment First to help people with developmental disabilities get competitive jobs in the community. So they're coming out of sheltered workshops where they make sub-minimum wage and getting jobs in the community. And many of them, when they get a job, they employ a job coach that makes between $11 and $15 an hour. This year, one of my clients got a job at minimum wage, 30 hours a week. He was able to get off of Social Security and pay into Medicaid that pays for his job coach, who makes $14 an hour. And he is going to get a better retirement, and I consider that a great success story. The reason I came tonight is to say, are you considering the impact on people with developmental disabilities who are putting a lot of these providers to work? This is a great employment-first environment. Wonderful things are happening, but in particular for people with developmental disabilities, do you understand that? Has anyone taken into consideration the impact? And that's my question. I don't know the answer. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Demereaux, Representative Holvey, and committee. I'm Treva Gams with Gamberetti's Italian Restaurant here in Salem, Oregon. Nice to see you, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you again. I sent in a written testimony, which will give you a lot of numbers and facts, and I, knowing that we had a short amount of time, I wanted to just highlight on some of that written testimony. As you will look at it, it will show you that my payroll will not be able to withstand a straight across the board minimum wage of 15, whether we go to, we have a tip credit or something like that, but it won't, with the sick leave and everything else that we've just added to it, you'll see clearly that I'll need to cut jobs. I have a fairly aggressive payroll. We try to keep raises anywhere from $1 to $1.50 per employee per year, and it's I'm up there with wages. We're anywhere from minimum to $16 an hour, but just a straight across really just impacts on what I do. I will no longer be able to keep 10 employees, and those are the jobs that are my hosts and my dishwashers. And losing those are going to lose part of with our committee, our community. This is jobs that are not living wage jobs. They are learning wage jobs. These are kids from high school, colleges that have no experience whatsoever. But I bring them in. We train them. We give them job development skills. We give them pride. We give them the opportunity to learn more. They either go up in our company or another company, or they graduate from their college and they're going into their fields. If I open a second restaurant, I create 10 to 30 more jobs. If we raise the minimum wage, I lose 10 jobs. So we need to create the opportunity to get me to open more stores so that I can bring in more jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. Greg Delgado, Lon Otterby, Tabitha Jensen, and Suzanne Miller.
Chair Hoagley, Senator Dembrough, committee members, my name is Lon Otterby. I live on a small farm in the Mohawk River Valley down near Springfield in Eugene. I'm speaking to you tonight on representing the national and the state Sierra Club and the Many Rivers Group of the Sierra Club in Lane County. The Sierra Club supports
raising the state's minimum wage to a livable level. We need thousands of working families to help us end climate disruption and build a clean energy economy that works for all. A living wage for families and environmental protection go hand in hand. The Sierra Club is a co-founder of the along with the United Steelworkers of the Apollo Blue Green Alliance, which has grown to include 15 unions and environmental organizations representing some 16 million people throughout the United States. We pursue our goals with union partners and sister environmental groups. The Sierra Club recognizes that without a livable wage, the workers of Oregon will not have the resources to support a livable planet. At Walmart shareholders meeting in June 15th, 2015, Sierra Club Executive Director Michael Brune called on the world's largest retailer to reduce global shipping emissions and convert to 100% clean energy and support workers' demands for a $15 hour livable wage. Walmart responded positively to both requests. Like Mr. Brune, I am here in solidarity with community partners and labor representing over 22,000 members and supporters of the Sierra Club in Oregon, asking you to support raising the minimum wage in our state. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Tabitha Jensen, and I'm a member of the Minimum Wage Advocacy Committee for City Club of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you tonight. The City Club of Portland is a nonprofit, nonpartisan education and research-based civic organization dedicated to community service, public affairs, and leadership development. In 2015, the City Club formed a minimum wage research committee made up of a diverse cross-section of City Club members to research and answer two questions. One, should individual municipalities in Oregon be allowed to set unique minimum wage rates that are higher than the state set minimum? And two, should Portland specifically set a higher minimum wage than the state set rate? The short answer to both questions is yes. These recommendations were presented before the entire City Club membership, which voted overwhelmingly to adopt the committee report. The research committees convened over 5 months, during which time they examined a large body of research targeted at the general public and academics alike. They heard testimony from every side of the minimum wage debate, including business interests, politicians, economists, employers, and labor representatives. They concluded that the current minimum wage is not a living wage for Portland, and because local jurisdictions currently do not have the ability to adjust the state minimum wage we recommend, that the legislature should repeal the preemption provision to allow local jurisdictions to decide for themselves what minimum wage is most appropriate. Our research has found that the cost of living in Portland is 50 to 80% higher than most of the rest of the state. Clearly, the current statewide wage of $9.25 an hour does not go as far in Portland as it would in more rural areas of the state, where the cost of living is significantly less. The state minimum wage has not caught up with the cost of living in Portland, and the result is a growing number of working poor who need to rely on government assistance programs to supplement their basic needs. When employers don't pay a living wage, it is all of us as Oregon taxpayers who must supplement the income for these lower wage working Oregonians with social assistance programs. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cislad Miller, and I was the vice chair of the City Club Minimum Wage Research Committee, and now I'm a member of the Advocacy Committee. We examined and considered the various concerns raised by those opposed to raising the minimum wage, including the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, the Portland Business Alliance, the Oregon Farm Bureau, and local economists. We reviewed various studies on the effects of increasing the minimum wage and found evidence to suggest that urban businesses affected by this increase are largely able to adapt through price increases. And in the specific cases of San Francisco and Santa Fe, which did raise their wages above minimum, their state set minimum, there's no evidence of any serious economic dislocation. We followed the unfolding story of the minimum wage in other cities and were able to apply lessons learned. A complete list of these witnesses and evidentiary works are cited in the report at the end, which we submitted earlier tonight. Analyzing all the data and evidence, we were comfortable concluding that most employers in the Portland area could adapt to an increase in the minimum wage without compromising the economic health of their city and region. Having one statewide wage simply doesn't make sense in a state as large and diverse as Oregon. An appropriate minimum wage for workers in Portland or Eugene might not be right for Lakeview or Hermiston or Nyssa. Our report calls for the localities to perform smart analysis and to engage with all the relevant stakeholders in their communities to determine what minimum wage would be most appropriate. And the best place for these decisions to happen is at the local level, not the state. Our committee concluded that the local control of minimum wage is the best policy scenario, and preemption stands in its way. Restoring local control of decisions regarding minimum wage and allowing local jurisdictions to be free to decide what wage best balances the needs of businesses and their workers is simply good policy. We urge this committee to move to repeal ORA 653017 and allow communities and cities to set minimum wages that address the needs of their citizens. Thank you.
Thank you for hearing me today. Thank you to the committee and Senator Dembro and Mr. Hovley. My name is Greg Delgado. I'm coming from Central Oregon. Traveled through the snow to get here as well. Central Oregon is, I'm just giving you a small picture of what's going on in Central Oregon. There's a lot of things going on in our state, and I don't envy this decision for you, but according to some unemployment facts, 45% of all non-farm jobs in the Central Oregon region are around the minimum wage. And in Jefferson County, it's around 52%. And in Crook County, it's around 45%. So for me, the minimum wage issue is part of it, because in Central Oregon, we're a tourism-based economy. So it's seasonal part-time work. Our workers don't work year-round. It's a feast or famine kind of environment. The cost of living has gone up. Rent has gone up. Our people are people don't work year-round. So, and also, the minimum wage is based on 40 hours a week. Nobody works 40 hours in our communities. We're working less than that. So that means that it's not a living wage, even close to that. So I encourage you to consider raising the wage and helping our communities move forward together. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Ms. Delgado. And colleagues, we're going to call up our last panel now. We have our staff and troopers to consider. They've been doing great work for us tonight. We started with a pro panel, so we want to end with a con panel. And Representative Coleman.
So next I have Ralph Matt, Vicki Irish, Kurt Huffman, and Edward Gerdes.
So sorry for everyone who won't be able to testify. We'd be happy to take your written testimony. We call people in order. On the pro side, we did get everyone who lives over 100 miles. Right, and yes, and again, the record will be open till 5 tomorrow if you want to submit testimony.
Good evening. If you'd go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Good evening. Thank you for your patience. I'm Edward Gerdes, Vice President of Bodelicious International Franchisor Cafe Yum Restaurants, manufacturer of yum sauces and other Oregon-made food products. I'm actually a resident in Eugene, Representative Colby's district.
What's your luck? Called you up.
Yeah. Bodelicious is Oregon's first benefit company, registered in 2014 along with 28 other companies at the same time with then Secretary of State Kate Brown. We follow the triple bottom line of business management, balancing profit motive with impact on communities where we do business, the welfare of our team members, and the environment. And I brought our public benefit report if anyone wants it, but it's part of the public record now as well. Bodelicious Cafe Yum actually supports a higher minimum wage. There wasn't a category of neutral support or opposed for what my position is. But our position includes in that increase in minimum wage three component parts. One is a reasonable implementation period with step increases, similar maybe to what the governor presented today. Number two, state preemption remains intact. And number three, adoption of a dollar-for-dollar tip credit. So long as that tip credit requires companies like us to collect the tips and report them on the payroll of the our team members, our employees. That allows accurate tax collection, and we've been doing that in our company for quite a while now. And all of our team members have supported it because there's a direct benefit to them. We have a 401k plan, and by collecting those tips, we make contributions on the 401k plan in the amount of the tips as well. So they actually got a pay raise by us collecting the tips.
Thank you. I know you're my constituent, but I have to cut you off and move on to other members. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. And my name is Vicki Irish, and I'm with Sherry's Restaurants. I've actually worked for Sherry's for 35 years. My first day was our fourth restaurant in Bend, and I started on the 4th of July, and I'm still here. I know you've heard a lot about how a minimum wage increase is going to affect restaurants that were only have a couple choices, and that's raising prices and being more efficient with our labor. I think you've heard enough about that, so I won't tell you anymore. But we think there's a third option in Oregon that was just mentioned, and that is to have tip credit legislation enacted. And just to understand what a tip credit is, you know, in our operations, the only employees who are paid minimum wage are servers. Our cooks, our dishwashers, our hosts all make more than minimum wage. And I looked at our credit card data, and servers receive, on average, in our operation, 15% of their sale as a tip. And each server generates about $100 in sales per hour, so that generates also $15 in tips. When you add that together with the minimum wage, that server is taking home $24 an hour, and that makes a server position the highest paid position in the restaurant. So 45% of our employees are servers that are making minimum wage plus tips. And everyone in the restaurant works hard. But when we are forced to give a minimum wage increase to this large group of employees that are already making $24 an hour, it limits the resources that we have to pay our cooks, our dishwashers, and our hosts. So every time that there's a minimum wage that's implemented, you have wage compression. And what the result of that with each minimum wage is that the servers make more because tips go up, because sales go up, and our cooks and our dishwashers make less. So we would like you to consider a tip credit in addition to the minimum wage increase.
Okay. My name is Ralph Matt. I have a restaurant here in Salem. I named the Besselow Roadhouse right down the street. And I want to thank the committee for staying this late and listening to us tonight. So I appreciate that. Full service restaurant employs a lot of people. We have 75 employees. 50 of those, 70% of those, are front of the house employees that all make minimum wage, but they don't make minimum wage. The numbers this last year, 2015, those 50 employees in the front of the house, the lowest paid employee made $22.66 an hour, and it went as high as $35 an hour. So they're making incredible money, and that's over 50% of our employees. It's 70% of our employees that are making that minimum wage. It prevents us from really paying the back of the house what we'd like to. They all make more than minimum wage, but we'd like to even pay them more. And so there's a lot of money that's that is not flowing through the way it should. I'm speaking for all full-service restaurants in the state. I mean, I'm sure if you talk to any of them, they would love to be able to get a tip credit. The front of the house people are making great money. The back of the house people need to make more money, and I think it would be much more equitable. We're going to have to raise prices drastically, especially if we go with a $13 minimum wage. It's going to cost the businesses a ton of money, because every time you raise prices, there is another segment of population that doesn't come in to eat. Things that we have at our restaurant currently that we're giving our employees is we do have a 401k that I'm going to have to take a look at and maybe that we commit 3% to, and then also meal privileges that they all get to engage in. Last year we spent $94,000 in free meals for our employees. And so those are things that we don't want to have to cut, and we shouldn't be able have to as long as we can get a tip credit implemented. Thank you for that.
Hi, I'm Barbara Wisenhunt from Salem, Oregon. And as a small business owner, we have created 24 new jobs over the last 10 years. And those are jobs that are full benefit pay with entry-level skilled and professional employees. Our lowest starting salaries are $15 an hour plus benefits, unless you're the owner, because we're the only people that work in our company who make less than minimum wage. The market controls what we're able to charge. We're a service business providing land surveying, civil engineering, and project management. We don't have the ability to just go out and raise our prices when the cost is raised for us. The proposed increase in labor costs will wipe out profitability, push up wages across the board if we want to try and maintain or retain skilled laborers and employees, and eliminate our ability to train new entry-level employees or make the retirement plan contributions for our staff. The minimum wages should be a gateway into the workplace, providing an opportunity for training and developing skills so that employees can move up to higher paying jobs. But that needs to happen with small businesses and other employers being able to also continue to be profitable. If the cost of training is too high, small businesses can't provide opportunities to help our employees develop those skills and to earn higher salaries over time. Those opportunities could disappear with this change. A minimum wage increase does not occur in a vacuum. Increasing labor cost raises the price of goods, necessities, and services. Therefore, increasing minimum wage does not create a permanent increase in buying power. It only inflates and raises the dollars needed to maintain the status quo.
Thank you. I appreciate you making the journey, those that traveled and those that came staying late. I sincerely apologize to people who signed up that did not get an opportunity to testify tonight. We just really need to end for the evening. We'll have more public hearings on these bills as they get introduced in February. So there could be more opportunities to testify for those of you that did not. Again, you can submit written testimony. Our record will be open until Friday, tomorrow, 5 p.m. And of course, always you can come back and talk to us, send us emails, and send us your written testimony if you don't have an opportunity to come back in February. Again, I apologize for those that didn't get to testify tonight. Thank you very much. I appreciate your... So I'm going to close the public hearing.
We close the Senate public hearing. Thank you all.